Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Just another notch on the bad PR belt, Uber fires more than 20 people in a harassment investigation.
This is Tech News Briefing from the Wall Street Journal.
Hello, welcome. This is the Wall Street Journal's Tech News Briefing. I'm Tanya Bustos in New York. So Uber has been scrambling to repair its image in the wake of a series of, let's go down the list, executive departures, a federal probe into its business operation, a lawsuit by Alphabet over alleged trade secret theft, wrongly withholding tens of millions of dollars from New York City drivers, an unfortunate leaked video from CEO Travis Kalanick berating an Uber driver, and the list unfortunately goes on. Most recently, we've learned the company has fired more than 20 workers as a result of an investigation into claims that it has an aggressive, male-dominated workplace that permits sexual harassment and sexism. Let's get more now from the Wall Street Journal's Greg Bensinger, joining us from San Francisco. Hi, Greg.
Glad to be here.
First off, if you wouldn't mind, a quick background on the investigations that took place leading to these firings. How did we get here?
It is concluded, but not officially. This is just sort of the initial results. Uber has two or three concurrent investigations going on, and two of them are conducted by law firms. One of them is Covington & Burling, and that's where Eric Holder works, the former U.S. Attorney General. Mm-hmm. What came out was the results of the other investigation, which is a law firm called Perkins Coie. It led to 20 firings. They say that, and these are not all sexual related, some of them are for other matters. They say they've let go 20 people and due to their investigation. They were looking into the specific claims that people made. They looked at emails, they interviewed dozens, if not hundreds of employees, and that's the results that came out.
So if a company has to fire as many as 20 people for various reasons, perhaps that indicates that something is really amiss deep within the culture. Some say that this might very well be just a systematic problem. Is it safe to say that at this point?
Well, we could certainly say that, but Uber would say, look, we've dealt with the people who were bad actors, and that's really what this was about. Obviously, we'll need to put in new processes, and that's what the Holder investigation allegedly will come out with. New training, new ways to complain, new ways to be anonymous and have a complaint about a manager. And so, you know, I think what they would like the public to hear is that we've gotten rid of the bad apples, and there are things we can do to improve the process whereby people have a complaint and have it dealt with swiftly. But we're cleaning house.
So what might some of those new measures look like from Uber on a corporate level or strategic level? Where does it start in terms of trying to address these issues?
Well, I'll admit that I'm speculating at this point. People who have done these kind of investigations before, I've talked to a number of them, and they say that typically what happens is you institute a new training process. This might include sensitivity training that everyone has to go through. New hires will have it as well. And often it's videos, you know, people who work in large companies will know these well. And by making people watch these, they check a box at the end and they've sort of, everyone sort of attests to the fact that they're on board with the sensitivity training, and it reduces the liability for companies. They can say, look, we have a culture here that's this way or that. Everyone's agreed to it, and, you know, people act in a way they shouldn't have. Well, they had the video and the training. They should have known better. And then it'll be, you know, there'll be a anonymous complaint line. They'll add representatives to their HR department. They'll have a clear pipeline towards how to get people in trouble or how to get complaints heard more quickly. And it'll be those kind of things. And then by indications, some people higher up in management may be fired or may be reprimanded.
We're speaking to The Wall Street Journal's Greg Bensinger about Uber tackling cultural problems at the office. You're listening to The Wall Street Journal's Tech News Briefing. Thanks for joining us. So, Greg, are there any indications as to where this all stems from? What do people familiar with the workplace have to say about what might be at the root of the company's cultural problems?
Well, you know, a lot have pointed to the CEO, who they say is brash and sort of aggressive. But that's a far cry from being, you know, sort of permissive about behavior that is illegal mm-hmm. in many cases, and so it's hard to say. I think you want to point to one person, but I think it's sort of an attitude of let's grow fast and let's do whatever it takes and let's not get concerned with the details. And sometimes the details are worker happiness and complaints about managers who've acted inappropriately. And those things are roadblocks to a much bigger mission, which is to, you know, sort of taking over the world and with ride hailing, having people change their behavior, no longer to catch taxis, but to do it this way through the app. And so you can sort of imagine people saying, this is a distraction and let's focus on what's really important here for our investors and for customers and all that.
Greg Bensinger, thanks as always for the time.
Thank you.
Canada. We should move to Canada.
It was here, at Donald A. Wilson Secondary School, where a grade 10 student said she heard the N-word come out of a teacher's mouth.
We saw two teachers walking towards us, and that's when we heard the remark.
So what exactly did you hear your teacher say?
We heard...
She says it happened after a group of black students were denied entry into a volleyball tournament. The teacher allegedly said the gym was turning into a, quote, N-fest.
Nigga!
The student says she immediately reported what she heard to a vice principal and was shocked when she saw the teacher at school the next day. Jennifer is the mother of one of the boys. She says she's concerned with how allegations of racism are being handled and that the teacher is still able to communicate with the students involved.
If my child had uttered a racial slur or something to a teacher, they would have been immediately suspended. I would have been called right away.
It's been 4 months since the incident first came to light, and there is still no resolution. The board has said that they have a third party investigating the allegations.
It's an issue that we take seriously, and we have contracted the service of a human rights law firm to look into the situation.
But Jennifer says it's students who are suffering in the meantime, and her son has been reluctant to go to school.
You feel different at school. Like, you feel... like, I don't really know how to explain it. You fit in, but you don't at the same time.
I feel helpless, I feel frustrated, but I don't have a choice. I feel backed into a corner because my kid still needs an education.
That report by Emin Barre. It's not clear how long the investigation will take. The mother you heard there says she was initially hoping for an apology from the teacher, but she now questions how the school and the school board handle allegations of racism.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Our weekly Nigger Fest, also known as our Thursday's Caucus Workplace Racism. If you have commentary you would like to share, if you have figured out strategies, anything that works in terms of counter-racist codification for the workplace, figured out things to help minimize conflict with other employees, conflict with other black employees, other white employees, other non-white employees in general, have helped you avoid being targeted as a quiet black person, you don't talk enough, or you're not a team player, or whatever other euphemisms they put around it. If you figured out some things to help neutralize any of these problems, unwanted touching, issues with pay, if you figured out a code for asking for a raise, any of these problems that seem to be regular issues where you have a problem, coworkers not doing their job, where it's starting to make problems for you, because these seem to be some of the common things, or any of the other problems. Just if you have figured out strategies so that every single black person can go in, take these steps, great job. You'll be able to work as long as you want, get all your promotions, no issues until you are ready to retire or move on to a better employment opportunity. You should be one of the first to dial in at the number 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Again, this is not a broadcast for spectators. If you know you're just tuning in to be entertained for a few hours listening to trials, tribulations of black people on their jobs, I am sure they have got better offerings for entertainment. We should not have folks who are just, you know, hanging out, listening, wherever you're listening at on your mobile device or computer or whatever it is. You are a black person. Anywhere in the world under the system of white supremacy, you should have input, commentary on racism, white supremacy, whether you've experienced it yourself, things that you've seen happen with other coworkers, reflecting on your work history, very important. That's something all of us, Gus T included, should be doing. Looking back, times when we were maybe a little bit more confused about racism, white supremacy. I feel like I might have to sneeze here. Times when we were a little bit more confused and just remembering how things played out on the job and not understanding racism, and now being able to look back and accurately understand what was happening and recognizing where the racism was, what we did then when we were confused, what we would do now. Having a better understanding, I think that can be very, very helpful as well. And we do have a significant number of younger listeners who don't have like a long work history, so they appreciate being able to hear some of the experiences. I tell you, that also can be very helpful for us understanding what it means to be white, hearing how common some of the ways, strategies, tactics that racists employ to make our work experience horrible worldwide. Quickly, I'll just say that that whole Uber situation, we talked about that before. I remember we played for workplace racism specifically a segment a few months back about this whole situation when it blew up, this white woman saying that she was facing these problems and it wasn't addressed and all this sexism. And, you know, they came out in a big to do sexism, sexism, sexism. White women have all these problems on the job. It is a white male dominated work environment and blah, blah, blah. And to see the follow up where they actually fired all of these people and, you know, are supposed to be doing other things. I played that in contrast to the segment that you heard in Canada, the school situation. Number one, school for me, that's workplace racism as well. You could put that in education too, but I just always heard school being described as that is work for children, and it's pretty comparable to the work environment, I would say. We do have a lot of black educators, so that is their work environment. But and this white woman was on her job, so anyway. But just to contrast with that situation where this racist white women teachers, someone just wrote about that, this white woman teacher in Canada, no less, where she could come out and say, oh, it's turning into a nigger fest in here. No reprimand, no suspension, no sensitivity training, nothing. She's back in school the next day, moving on, hoping we don't have nigger fest number two to break out. Just to contrast, and that's something that I think people should keep in mind, generally speaking, to see when there's an allegation of any of these other forms of mistreatment they like to bring up when it's conflation, alleging that it was sexism against a white woman or some sort of LGBT issue, ageism, disability issue, anything else, to see how those issues are resolved, if anybody's terminated, if they change policy moving forward. And when something happens where it's an allegation of racism, white supremacy, particularly where a black person is being mistreated. Moving forward, lots of people wrote in this week. It is going to be a task just to see if I can get through the emails. I will do my best. Number one, I am a track coach in the middle school, in a middle school in which I'm a track coach in the middle school in which I work. Our school is mainly black and Hispanic, quote unquote. However, the county that the school is in is mainly white. Most of our competition is white. At a track meet this past week against a majority white team, a white kid was speaking to his black teammate and pointed at my teammate and said, "You should be with those kids. You should be on their team, not ours, because they look like you," all in quotes. There was also another statement referring to our team as trash. I was not there when this occurred, but I talked to my students about racism and how to handle something like this if it ever occurred again. I would be very curious to hear what was said. They did not say anything to the white kid and came to speak to me immediately. I went back to speak to the other team's coach and said, "I'm not going to tell you what to do, but your athlete made a racist comment to my students. If he participates today, we will be leaving promptly." His mother came to pick him up and the coach sent him home. Prior to him going home, the coach said he wanted to come and apologize. I said, "No apologies necessary, man. We just wanted to make sure he was removed from the premises and not able to participate today." Afterwards, I told my team that I was proud of the way they handled the situation in a professional manner. A plus. Right on cue, as I said, a lot of our listeners, we have black educators, that is their work environment, and this is pretty much going to be just like what you experience for black children. We have younger black children who listen as well. This is pretty much what it's going to be like. The things that you're experiencing in school right now, pretty nice representation of the way things are going to be when you get on the job. So might as well go ahead and start preparing now and learning so you can make better decisions and foil some of their racist efforts. But yeah, this sounds phenomenal. If you are interested, if you're listening, if you want to maybe chime in, call in and kind of give some of the details about what you said when you spoke with your athletes about this situation when they reported it to you, that would be interesting. But I think that is phenomenal. Black self-respect. I don't know where the idea originated from in terms of we're not going to play, if that was something that you discussed with your students first to see, you know, what they want to do. If they were, "Are we prepared to leave?" If they say, "No, we're not going to discipline this racist child." And, you know, if you all are going to leave, fine, you'll just forfeit the game. If they were on board with that, I'd be interested in maybe some of those details. But however it went down, it sounds like it was handled brilliantly. Great that you got a reprimand, because that's what I said consistently. Generally, these type of situations, nothing happens to the racist, whether it's a racist child, racist woman, racist elderly person. There's generally no punishment when a black person or black people are being targeted. So great anytime that you can actually get, you know, some punitive action taken to show that this is totally unacceptable behavior. Great. And then being able to talk to children about, black children, about racism, white supremacy. Brilliant. A plus is all around. Next. Ooh, boy, this is a little long. All right. I'm a black male of medium chocolate complexion living in one of the northeast states here in the U.S. I came across your program via Black Talk Radio a few months back. I was searching for more news related programs, but with a black perspective. Okay. Since listening to the program, it's opened my eyes. Oh, man. Since listening to your program, my eyes are opening to the racism that is all around me, including in the workplace. I'm getting a little more balance as a Christian to better understand the reality of this global evil system and how it has perverted Christianity. This is deviating off of racism. The workplace. Okay. They're weaving in and out. This is a little bit more difficult because it's longer and it's not focused. Generally, for workplace racism, if we can just stay focused on the workplace racism, or if you have other commentary in the email, if you can maybe attach that at the top or the bottom and not have it interspersed so we have to weave in and out of the workplace commentary. Let's see. Okay, here we go. I think I got to the workplace stuff. I feel like my head has been buried in the sand, and I've ignored the subtle and blatant racism that takes place occasionally at work. I've been with the company for over 25 years and have moved up to now a management position. Many years back, before I became a manager, I remember a time when the building lost power for over 20 minutes, where only the emergency lights were on. Being very dark in the building, many of us walked around and talked because we could not work at our computers nor be on the phones. I recall one of the white coworkers say, "Smile," insert this black male's name, "so we can see you, ha 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 ha." I shrugged it off and said the same thing back to him. Another time, I overheard from my cubicle my former white supervisor talking openly and loudly to other coworkers about doing some yard work in the summer. He said that he was sweating like a, of course, you know, nigger. I reported this to the personnel manager, who is white, but to show how conditioned I was, I said to her that I didn't want anything to happen to him because he was the one who interviewed me and hired me. Trust me, now I wouldn't say that. She mentioned that the behavior is not acceptable and that she would talk to him. To add to that, over the years, I had to fight for just about every increase above the normal 3% annual employee increase. In one case, I had to take my newly appointed supervisor. I had to make my newly appointed supervisor aware that I have gone above and beyond the call of duty, and he planned a meeting and the manager to discuss what could be done. The supervisor agreed that an increase was deserved, but made it very clear that he was not going to try to get me more money than he was getting paid. One time, I was promised a higher increase after a certain product and related personal work that I had to do to accompany the release of the product. The time came and went, but no increase. I had to bring it back up again and make an issue reminding my manager of what he said. Soon after, I received a bonus. It wasn't an increase in salary, but a one-time bonus check. Now, see that. Continuing, when you look at the top level presidents and VPs a few years back, there was one black VP, but now he has moved on. It's all white with an exception of one Indian VP of India. I don't recall ever seeing one black child receiving scholarship money for the yearly company contests for graduating senior high school students of employees of this combined multi-business corporation. I used to try to fit in by going to the picnics and gatherings, but now I can care less about socializing. Now, I have a question about that. Have you noticed a difference? If you're listening, sir, have you noticed a difference in terms of how you were treated when you went to the picnics and gatherings, and then once you stopped participating, was there a difference? Were you questioned about why you're not participating? That would be a question. Continuing, because the company is very large with multiple locations around the world with deep pockets, their ethics program is pretty strict, yet scenarios will surface from time to time. I'm confident that if proven, documented issues arise that HR will deal with it immediately. There are more personal experiences that I can share and of my wife and children at work and school. That's it for now. Keep the program going. I can't even read the conclusion to the email because it'll totally distract everything with the broadcast. I'll leave it at that. He is not. Yeah, I'll just leave it at that. All I would say with the email, like I said, when we're more confused about racism, white supremacy, a lot of things can happen that, you know, we might look back on and shake a head or what have you, in terms of what you said about the white guy who made his racist comments. And then you went to report it and didn't want him disciplined or what have you. I think that's very, very common. That's just a part of our program. I hear that all the time when a white person practices racism, and frequently it'll be the black person mistreated. It'll be one of the first ones to stand up and say, "Hey, I don't want this white person to go to jail or to lose their job or anything like that. You know, if we could maybe just have a hug and sensitivity training, everything will be all right." But that's why we are all still learning and trying to make improvements. The money issue, that's substantial. That's why I've been asking the past few weeks, like, if people figured out like a code, what to say, what not to say, if you're going to ask for an increase in compensation, because whites can make it so difficult. I think Emmy talked about having documentation. I think this is one where they lied, where they said that they were going to give him a boost, and then they just gave him a one-time bonus instead of an actual increase in pay, as though he should be satisfied with that. That's one of those where if you can't get it in writing, and I know sometimes people might feel uncomfortable about, you know, feeling like you're being pushy to get a white person to sign a contract or to put it in writing that, you know, you said on this date, June 8th, that I was going to get, you know, such and such a raise, you know, for, you know, whatever it is on this date, to try to make them do it. They might say, well, no, you're not going to get it now, that sort of thing. That email confirmation, that can be helpful as well, to confirm, to put in writing what was said, that sort of thing. That way you have a record. That can be very helpful in having a paper trail, actual documentation about this sort of thing, reneging on promises that, you know, this was going to be available to you or you were going to get this increase, etc. Whew, we did not even put a dent in the emails that were sent in. Let's see if this one is short. We can include this one is short. We'll get this one in. This blackmail. I mentioned during an earlier broadcast that my daughter was reading Angela Davis's biography. Well, it was during the school year, so I aborted the assignment. Now that she's out on summer break, I have given her words to define. These words were in the text of Killing the Black Body by Dorothy Roberts, former guest on the program. I've read the book twice and highlighted what I felt was of importance. Her new assignment is definitions. Listening to the audiobook of Killing the Black Body and reading the highlighted interest. I feel this exercise will broaden her vocabulary, denying the opportunity for her to be easily tricked or confused by words. Also, I wanted her to understand the importance of her female body. Schools are inundated with terrorists as the core to our kids' education. Arming her with word comprehension will make it less likely for her to be indoctrinated by terrorist narratives. She is 12 with more understanding of racism, white supremacy than many victimized adults. Cheers to the parents. She stands with her father that all whites are criminal because all whites are racist. She exceeds that it isn't a system. It's white people doing things to advance an outcome. Thanks for the program. Right on. We will stop there. Still quite a few of these to go. So that'll be job number two for Gus. I will add Stacy from the UK. I forgot to ring her at the start of the broadcast. We'll get her in now, and then I'll add the rest of the callers who dialed in with a hand up. Let's see. As I'm adding Stacy, the number again, 641-715-3640, and the code 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Feel free if you have commentary.
Can I be heard? Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. We can hear you.
Oh, okay. Greetings, everyone. Yes, I thought that was an excellent report by I believe the track coach, who I'm assuming is also a full-time teacher. Excellent. Every high school district in the Northwestern Hemisphere has a governing athletic athletic body that has rules and regulations. Now, when it comes to the sport itself, there are some specific rules and regulations, you know, like you can't jump the gun in track, that sort of thing like that. But there's also behavioral rules. And I'm pretty sure the one that what he was talking about is also in the rule book. So the whole idea of challenging that coach to enforce the rule on that particular student was right on the money. I should say no metaphor. It was accurate, very accurate. And let's say if something, some kind of challenge comes back on him, I'm pretty sure that that governing body would support what he did, because I am not 100% sure, but I'm 99.99% sure that it's right there in their laws as far as verbal behavior is concerned. You don't expect that much in track, but it definitely happens in football, which I've been involved in for 36 years as a coach. It's very much involved if something like that took place. And he was excellent on his on what he said and quote unquote demanded. So, you know, I give him an A+ on that. In the beginning, you were airing some of Mr. Fuller's ideas and suggestions. Once again, vital, very vital, that just because you have been employed, you have been given employment as a non-white black person, you have to have a set of rules and regulations for yourself in order for you to, as in a most efficient way as possible, get through your quote unquote employment career. You have to form some habits, some constructive habits. And some of the very things he's saying is very true. You know, in other words, itemize on, okay, how long it would take to change a tire. Just in case I have a flat tire or something happens with my car, what would be plan B? Will be plan B, you know, that sort of thing. Always be prepared. Always go through scenarios because they do come up. They do come up on a job. I'm telling everybody who was listening by experience, it does come up. One thing that helped me get through over 25 years on the job that I was on was forming those good habits. Plan the night before. You know, if you have a uniform, have that uniform ready, not in the morning. Have it ironed and whatever you need to do to it to have it proficient, do it the night before. Have an extra uniform. Be prepared. You know, that sort of thing. I mean, I remember telling this story once before a long time ago. I worked at a station, a fire station, that was next to a facility that a junior college had for training firefighters. And at the time, Dade County Fire Department was hiring. And they have a process that they go through. And this, in the last process is the interview, where they have the interview. Let's say you had to be there at 8 o'clock. And I'm telling you, it just made me so angry that on that particular day, where the prospective employees were supposed to show up for the interview, you having these non-white black people knocking on the fire station's door that morning to ask for directions to this place. Now, mind you, now they send that letter to you in the mail. They send that letter to you in the mail 2 weeks ahead of time. 2 weeks ahead of time that you were supposed to report here at this particular time, because at 8:00.1, the door is locked. And whatever that opportunity that you did, all that preparation you did in order to get to that point, you lose it. And I was just sad to see so many non-white black people knocking on the door. Now, mind you, now the location of that fire station to that headquarters on where that interview is to be at is about 30 miles away. But what they did, they waited to the last minute to come ask someone for directions to this place. And they had 2 weeks to figure it out. You know, so a lot of your ability to be able to get through because some of us are not really, you know, in the idea of being on a job for 25 years. But if you are, you know, if you have that career type of situation going on, you're going to have some set of rules for yourself, not just the rules and regulations from that job. You got to have some personal rules and regulations on what you're going to be doing, how you're going to do it, being prepared on a daily basis. And that would get you the most smoothest transition to be able to get through that period of time so you can get to something that's called retirement. I can tell you that from experience, and that's all I have for right now. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Absolutely. I appreciated that from Mr. Fuller, the comments he played during the early portion of the broadcast, just where he was talking about how far away from your job you live, where your residence is. Are you someplace if your car breaks down or something happens, an emergency happens, that sort of thing? Are you still able to get to and from the job and that sort of thing? And races just putting obstacles, deliberately putting obstacles in place so they'll have a means to fire you so that you can't be there long term, and making sure you have those strategies in advance. I think you talked about if it's a new job, you already know the route. You already know where it's going to be. You've already done a drive-by. You know the traffic. They have, man, the apps and stuff that they got online now, like you can probably look and get an average of, you know, this is what the traffic commute time average is for the past 20 years on this route. Like they probably got all kinds of crazy statistics and analytics now, but I mean, at minimum, you know, you can look online. This is the average time it takes to drive there and make sure that I'm not late. Just, you know, and a lot of this would just come down to understanding, at least I think, understanding racism, white supremacy, what it is, how it works, and that you are going to be terrorized on the job. Like, just understanding, like, oh, this is not something where I can just expect that I'm competent and I can do my job well and show up on time and everything is going to be great. No, that's not what this is at all. Like, this is total warfare. You can be tremendous at your job and still be abused, terrorized, fired at any given moment, denied promotions, and all of it. So just having that in mind, I think, would motivate a lot more people to be as serious as firefighter is talking about in terms of the suggestions. Have that uniform done the night before or 2 days ahead of time. All that stuff in advance, so you can just get up, get where you got to go, and be there on time. On time. Other folks who dialed in, who have a hand up, if we have not heard from again, this is not the broadcast for spectators. Other folks who dialed in, you should be with us as well. I think we should also have Stacy from the UK with us also. Stacy from the UK, are you with us?
I guess.
Grand. Good to hear from you. Good to hear from you as always. Tuning in, let's see, for her about 1:40 a.m. Friday morning. Is that accurate?
Accurate. Right on. And also, at a general election taking place.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. Theresa May is going to get it done. That no good Jeremy Corbyn is going to take an L. Did you vote yet?
Oh, I have. Oh, my goodness.
Who'd
yes.
who'd you vote for?
Certainly not Theresa May. for Corbyn or the Labour Party, but it's too early to tell in terms of the outcome. And at the moment, I'm digressing, aren't I, Gus? So I won't actually. I just realised I'm going off track.
Well, I did ask, but I mean, it is an election. I mean, that's big news. They are talking about it. She voted.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's too early to call. But at the moment, it doesn't look like she's going to get the majority she was hoping for.
Oh, yeah. I think she's going to win. She's the incumbent, but I don't think she's... I think she thought she was going to win by a huge margin and said that that would bolster her political power, and that is not going to happen at all. Yeah, that's compensatory calling. Well, bingo. We'll talk about that down the road. Did you have workplace racism that you wanted to discuss now, or did you want to wait and listen a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of things that I've got, so I'll intersperse them throughout the program if there's enough time. But I wanted to... I know you were asking about pay rises or strategies for pay rises a couple of programs ago. And to be honest, I don't think I have a strategy that I've worked through, I have to be honest. But I guess one thing I think in terms of lessons learned and from my own career is that there was a time when I was promoted in a role. And I was given the opportunity rather to negotiate on my salary, and I'll be honest, I was so unprepared for that because I'd never been in that position before. It was always a struggle that I hadn't I didn't prepare. I was in a position where it was a considerable increase in salary anyway, so I was happy to go in at the start of that new grade. However, what I didn't appreciate that was that somebody was going to actually ask me, what did I want in terms of salary? And it sounds incredibly naive, but I have to be honest. So I guess the reason why I'm bringing it up is because if people do ever find themselves in that position, and I don't think it happens for non-white black employees very often, make sure that you do prepare for the unlikely scenario where someone does give you that opportunity. I do have a school situation that I wanted to touch on, if I've got time, Gus.
Sure.
This was a long time ago, because my daughter was about 6 at the time, and she had moved into a new class. Her teacher the previous year was a black female. This new teacher was a white female, and there was a little boy in my daughter's class who had also gone up to the next class with her. And I think this child did have some challenges in his family background. He was hyperactive, to say the least. However, one day, the teacher called me at the end of the day when I was picking up my daughter, and she asked to speak to me. And I said, is there anything wrong? And she said, oh, nothing, but I just wanted to know if your daughter had made any complaints about this non-white child. This boy. And I said, no, why? And she goes, well, it's just that she notices that this particular boy picks on my daughter a lot, and so she was just making me aware of it. And I said, oh, okay, well, thank you, but she hasn't said anything, and I'll speak to her about it. Now, I was always accustomed to asking my daughter how her day went and if there was anything I needed to know about, as standard. So I was, slightly confused that nothing had been said to me. So as we were walking home, I asked her, I said, does this little boy pick on you? And she said, no. And they used to play together anyway. And I knew he was boisterous and had a few issues, but my daughter never complained about him in that way. So I said, okay, thank you. But what the teacher hadn't realized is that I got on very well with his grandmother anyway. So what it dawned on me is that this teacher wanted to use me as an excuse to get that child out of her classroom by telling me that this child was picking on my daughter, when in fact that wasn't the case. So what I did do is then go and speak to his grandmother and make him aware that that was what was going on. I've got a few other updates, but I'll come back to it. Yeah, but I just thought I'd share that, because I do think, we do have to be very careful as parents and how we get used by teachers in schools. I'll mute my line, Gus.
Mm-hmm. Wowee. That is, if my math is correct, I think that's 3 white women that we've heard out terrorizing and doing different things. So this white woman, workplace racism, because they do the same sort of thing on the job regularly. Mr. Edward Williams, in his book, How to Support and Defend the United States Constitution for Victims of Racism, he has an incident where his white supervisor called him into the office and said, what do you think about, this is a black female, we'll just say, Susan. What do you think about Susan? And he says, what do you mean? And he says, well, do you have any problems with her performance? She had any issues, and she caused you any problems? And he says, I don't really understand. And so he keeps asking questions, and he comes to his conclusion about all of this is that this white person wants to fire this black female and wants to he needs another nigger's help to fire this black person. And so Mr. Williams said he just ended all of it by saying, what problem are we trying to solve? And that pretty much ended the whole conversation. He went back to work and she kept her job. But he figured that was what he was trying to make happen. And racist they do this all the time. This side of situation, they call you in and, oh yeah, I think, you know, he's been picking on your daughter a lot and he's just a little savage and we just don't know what to do with him to start something up. And then you get upset and go, I mean, wow, that is incredible. And it sounds like that is another A plus. Sounds like we had two listeners at least who had brilliant codification in how they responded in minimizing conflict with another black person to go inform this child's grandmother that she said you all had a good rapport, to go talk to her, let her know what was going down, and talking with your child, your daughter, about this situation, and her saying, no, I don't, no problem at all, we're fine. Like, just white women, dastardly all around the world, U.S., Canada, U.K., all around the world, white women in the classroom, lethal. And the importance of having those counter-racist strategies, being prepared, and just goes back to what Mr. Fuller says all the time, racism, white supremacy, what it is, how it works, that is critical. When you understand, then you understand the importance of being prepared when you go into these work environments, classroom, etc. Other folks who dialed in, if you have suggestions, if you have comments on some of the things that we've heard thus far, if you have your own situation, if you have a hand up, line should be open.
Can I be heard? Hello, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Can I be? This is Big Victim from Birmingham, Alabama. I recently got I was off work for a week on my vacation, and I went back to work this past Monday, and I've listened to you, Gus, and I mean the show about, at least I drive a truck about at least about, I say about 500 hours worth of cows episodes. So I think I'm up, I'm pretty coded, but I heard one episode that you said that just wait for the sun to come up. White people like the sun, just wait for it to come up, and they're going, that racism is going to show up. So on Saturday, I said, Lord, I'm going to have to get back out here, go back to work Monday. I go to one of my stops, and it's an anti-sexual black male security guard. I came in, signed in, gave him my license. He looked at my license. I'm on my license. I'm cheesing real hard. He said, dog, buddy, you on there? You show our cheesing on there. I said, yeah, I was happy to get my CDLs back. And he said, oh, okay. He started laughing. So it was an old white lady. She started looking. So I got back in the truck, went back, picked up my load, came back out. The little old white lady came to me, said, I signed out. The little white lady said, she about 75, 70. She said, all right, you be safe now getting down that road. I said, yes, ma'am. And she said, don't let the dog hit you from behind. I said, okay. She said, you go out there, have an accident, I'm going to come down there and I'm going to beat your ass. And I looked and I said, okay. And I got back to the truck. And I said, there it goes right there. The racism. First day back on work. That's all I got to share. Love the cows. Stay blessed.
Wow. I mean, it doesn't get more flagrant than that. I mean, wow. I think I've said before, birds chirp, dogs bark, white people practice racism. White supremacy. That is pretty standard. That's one of those. And she says she's an older white woman, and this is god awful Alabama, where I have been, unfortunately. An older white woman, I could totally see it. It doesn't have to be Alabama.
No,
I could see it.
No, Gus, that was South Carolina.
Oh, okay.
I'm from Birmingham. I left out. I drove over. It was in Anderson, South Carolina.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, my apologies.
So, I knew where I was at.
The land of Dylann Roof and my favorite governor all time.
Absolutely.
Benjamin Pitchfork Tillman, my man. But I totally could see how if someone, you know, said, whoa, that I think is an act of racism, and what are you even doing talking to me? Like, oh, come on now. She's 70. She's just messing around. She's just, you know, a sparky old woman. And that is just a total tacky trashy display of racism. And I kind of, in a work environment, I cannot imagine like a white person, period, of any age talking to another employee in that manner in a job. I mean, unless we're at a bar or something, unless, you know, this is just whatever. And we got this is a saloon type atmosphere where people are, you know, walking around and drinking beers and all sorts of debauchery is going on all day long. But I mean, if this is a job, you said you sign in and what have you, like we got some sort of decorum in how we conduct ourselves. That is just as flagrant as it gets with regards to white supremacist behavior. And I would say good job, and not, you know, that's one of those where I think some people might get emotional and fly off the handle. And just going back to what I've been saying today, the importance of understanding what racism is. You said at the beginning of your commentary, sir, you said what you'd heard on the program before, you can bank on it. It's predictable, white people being racist. And I think when you can have that in your head, when you can keep that, just be honest with yourself about that, it keeps us from being stunned when these type of situations happen. And I think that can help us from losing our cool, as they say, when you get really upset and you yell back at them, what are you doing talking to me? And you curse back at her, and then you end up getting in trouble. And they end up, well, we're going to give you another vacation. How about that? You can take a week of unpaid leave for offending this dear white woman who's probably worked here for 30, 40 years or what have you. You know, you can get a week off and think about your disrespectful conduct. That's, you know, how a lot of those situations go. So great job not responding emotionally. And, you know, that's one all of us just keep that in mind. That's how white people get down. You cannot be surprised. Just in a work environment, make sure you do not lose your cool and, you know, get outraged and yell back at them, because generally 10 times out of 9, that's the way I meant to say it, they're going to discipline you, not the white person, especially if they're 70. Other folks we haven't heard from, got a hand up. Number again, 641-715-3640, code 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Other folks dialed in with the hand up. You have commentary, feel free. We have spectators again. I will get in some of the emails while folks, even though I will state again, Thursdays is not a program for spectators, certainly not the workplace racism. I don't think the folks that are listening in via computer or if they're listening in via phone, I don't think these folks, if you're working, even if you're self-employed, can truthfully say they're not having, haven't seen anything related to workplace racism, not having any issues. I'm a little doubtful that that is the case, but continuing, I will go back to our email list. Picking up on the next one, they wrote theirs out. They said they normally work during Thursday, so they wrote it out in advance. I'm a 58-year-old black male who lives in the San Francisco Bay Area, 415. I was recommended for work at a theater from an associate who knew of my experience as a food server for private events for powerful people who live in the Bay Area. Gotta be white people. I worked at the job for about 3 years, and it was my first manual labor job in my life. I served many people who control banks, the internet, and Amazon. Anyway, I was hired December 26, 2016 to serve drinks as a bartender, which I had never done before. I fumbled my way through for about a week. The other bartenders, majority non-white males, attempted to give me constructive information and assisted me when I couldn't perform certain tasks. Very little information was shared regarding the actual business, and after a week, the bar business in the theater was sold. I had heard rumors of the selling of the bar and a year prior to this, and it finally went through. The new owners brought in a racist white male to get their new business up and running to a higher standard. After a few days, it was clear to him that I was the least competent. I had never worked a cash register before and was suddenly responsible for thousands of dollars. When their new cash register system crashed on the first day, I was interrogated and asked, did I steal about $800? They didn't call the police and they had no other staff available on such short notice, so I did not get fired. The racist suspect male supervisor watched me intensely and made me count hundreds of dollars on demand and explained things to me like I was retarded, which in the system of white supremacy, I am retarded. Continuing. I have never worked in the inner system of a business and I was frequently confused. The bosses would constantly sneak up on me and watch me work. I would get very nervous every time this happened and would fumble. My job was to serve 300 to 600 white people as much alcohol as they could drink before shows in the theater. Woo! Man, I'm just pausing because that sounds astronomically stressful. I have bartended before, but I did not have to serve that many people, thankfully, and I did not have to serve a lot of white people either, thankfully, but bartending in general can be tough depending on the volume of people and what have you, but oh man, that, I don't know, it would have to be a substantial amount of compensation because that just, oh man, danger, unpleasantness, all of the above. Oof. Worst combination in the universe, whites, alcohol. Continuing. After about 3 weeks, I was still slow at doing the job, and even though they didn't have replacement workers, I knew I was going to be fired as my hours were being cut to a few hours a week. I was getting more and more depressed about this. Several days later, when the racist supervisor was pretty fed up with me, I decided to go out fighting. I went in to work and decided to put on a grand show as if I had been a bartender all my life. I didn't know how to make most cocktails or all the complicated names white people used for these cocktails, but I made up whatever they would ask for and realized many of the customers didn't know how they were made either, although a few told me how to make it correctly and a few got angry that I messed up their drink. I made huge movie-like bartender gestures and addressed every customer as sir or ma'am and encouraged them to tell me about themselves and their drink as I tried to guess what they wanted in them. Every night I went home and Googled videos about drinks and how to blend ingredients. I didn't get fired but was sent running around by the white overseer and told if I didn't get it together fast, he would let me go. He spoke to me rudely and constantly questioned everything about me. I found out he was in a temporary position and would be gone after the owners felt we were up to their standard, so I decided to hang in there as best I could. It was difficult for them to get replacements, and I told the overseer if he ever needed someone at the last minute to fill in, he could give me a call anytime, making myself available 7 days a week. Finally, he took advantage of this, and I would do just about anything he requested, only replying with yes or no, sir. I studied every day and bought all the ingredients and equipment that we used at the bar and made a bar at home. I spent $150 on all kinds of alcohol and made my lady mate and I drink the cocktails I made almost every night until it was all used up. I made it a habit to never engage in small talk with coworkers and attempt to not let my guard down. I stayed in the question lane, which got most of my coworkers and bosses to share constructive information, and I thanked them even when they mistreated me. It's now June, and I have survived this job, as there are so few employment opportunities in the Bay Area for black people. That is the truth. I have a full schedule of work now. I always listen to the suggestions regarding policy and procedures, but this business is able to operate without enforcing much of that. Now, that is one thing that I can say, totally different environment. A lot of, I would even say a good portion of what we discuss here is not applicable if you're in an environment like this, in one of these lawless type environments where there's not really, where the policy and procedure is real loose, it might not even be written down. Man, totally different environment to operate in, and particularly if it's an environment with alcohol on the job. Totally different situation. It's going to be a lot more hazards and unpredictable things that might happen. Continuing, the regular overseer has told me he is happy with my work selling their drinks to their customers in their theater, as I remind myself that it is not my bar, my alcohol, or my company. I'm just there to earn coins and do the work. Thanks to Gus and all the callers who have shared so many ideas on how to carry oneself on the plantation. Great from our listener down in the 415. The only thing I would add to this Very important what he showed there about being on a job and saying, hey, this is not something that I have experience for. This is something that we've talked about a lot as well, being on jobs where you're not adequately trained. Where white people, it doesn't sound like these white people, the new owners, when they came in and bought this theater bar situation, it doesn't sound like they, you know, offered. They have bartending school that does exist. I mean, they could have said in this the Bay Area, I know they got classes on bartending, like, hey, you know, we'll pay for you to go to this class. You take this course. It's I don't think that's the sort of thing that normally takes a year to complete. Right. It's not a PhD. That's the sort of thing you can knock out. In a few weeks, if not, you know, a matter of days, we'll send you to bartender school and, you know, boom, whatever. I don't think it's really pricey either. They could have done that. If you're in a work environment and you know, I am not properly trained to do this job well enough to keep the job, you might have to supplement your training. And it sounds like that's exactly what this person did. Mr. Fuller might even say that this is a great illustration of compensation, what compensatory counter-racism looks like. I'm on this job. I want to keep it. Looks like they're going to fire me. I'm going to do what I can to see if I can improve my skills. Going home, practicing, having, he said, his care mate, having her participate and being able to get better. That might be something that you have to do on these jobs where you can get information and use some of your free time to train, enhance your skills, learn more so that you can function better on the job. And it seems like that worked out. I'm also a big proponent of the sir, ma'am thing. I do that all the time. And I view it not as a, oh, you all are superior to me and I'm looking. I say it to everybody because the environment that I'm in is so saturated with disrespect. I have found that that can be effective when you just, I'm not trying to be rude to anyone. I say sir, ma'am to everyone. It doesn't matter if you say that back to me. I'm just trying to move. That's just my code in terms of how I address people. It really doesn't have anything to do with you at all. I even say sir and ma'am to racists and, you know, whatever else, because it really doesn't have anything to do with the other person. End of that one. Thank you so much for writing in. If you want to update us more on what has transpired on with your job situation, feel free. I'm sure folks would like to hear updates as well. Checking back in, folks who dialed in, commentary from other folks who have a hand up. Wacky. And there are people with hands up, and even they are not commenting. No idea. Wackiest thing ever. Another. Yes, sir.
Hi, you guys. Everybody. This is The Voice 305. I think last time I talked about how my ex called me about the situation with the Hispanic lady, you know, that was speaking Spanish, and a friend, co-worker, had caught the gist of what she was saying. And basically relayed a message back about how, you know, they're like pigs and their work area is like pigs. And but she had called me again with another issue this week, and it was about another Hispanic lady that works in their department. She handles an account, you know, just like her workload is just as even as everybody else. Now, my ex has been there for 7 years, and this lady's only been there for 3. And, you know, she complained about how her workload was too much. So the Hispanic lady tells the boss, like, hey, you know, I'm going to leave because I'm not getting enough money. So it's been, I think since that time, it was about last week. So this week they expected her to leave. So when somebody asked, hey, what's going on with the lady, the Hispanic lady, and they said, oh, she's leaving. And the Hispanic lady overheard that and came into their little area and she said, no, I'm not leaving. Matter of fact, they gave me $18 an hour to stay here. So basically she's getting paid way more than everybody else. So it kind of ruffled the feathers of my ex. So when she called me and I told her, I said, hey, listen, pretty much just be cool with it. Don't say nothing because her pay doesn't go into effect till next month. I said, wait till it's on record and then you go in there and say something. But then when you go in there and say something, don't bring everybody's name in there. You go in there on your own and you fight for your own money. Let them leverage it on your own. And she was like, yeah, that sounds like an idea. Because I said, if you go in there and you go to the boss is pretty much, he's a white guy. So I said, if you guys go in there and you guys are all black, they're going to sit there and give you the same excuse like, oh, well, I try to see if I could get you guys, you know, just giving you that waiting to that weight of hope. And I just told her, just go in there and fight for yourself. And she wasn't really supposed to release that information like that. So she could get in trouble for it as well. But like I say, with the whites and Hispanics, it's a lot different when you're black. So I just wanted to chime in about that. Also, I wanted to chime in about Comey, his workplace racism. I kind of chuckled because I know, Gus, you always, and the callers, everybody always emphasize about keeping notes and how he kept notes on Trump and he didn't keep notes on Bush or Obama. I found that very interesting. So that was a highlighted moment of that interview. And I'll mute my line.
Oh, I did hear about that. He said he started making notes after his conversations with Trump, if I recall correctly from some of the news reports. Former FBI Director James Comey, Mr. Comey, he said he would, I guess, go have his talks with President Trump. And then once it was done, he would just go jot his whole notes, I guess, like a summary. And that's almost what I've said you can do with workplace racism. That was his job. That was may have been his workplace journal where he took his little notes, talked with President Trump today, you know, whatever else. But you could do the same thing. And it doesn't have to be really long. I've been saying that for a long time. It doesn't have to be something where you're not writing a book with this thing. You can, but it can be really short. You can take 5-10 minutes and just jot down, you know, this is what happened, or just the highlights. This is what's significant. Or if you want to, you know, write a specific sentence or what have you, or a phrase, if a racist joke was said or something like that, you just jot it down really quick and move on. No big deal. And that could end up being really important. Those little, you know, few sentences that he jotted down ended up being really important down the road. Same thing can happen with you as a victim of racism. As for your, I guess your ex girlfriend, her compensation issue, I think waiting for it to be officially like on the books so that they can't say, oh, that's a rumor. That's not what she's being paid. This is what I think that's a wise move with that situation. I was thinking, I don't know how many other employees there are, right? When you were saying like encouraging your wife to go in and just as an individual, United Independent, right? Go in individually and get her, see if she can get her compensation increased to be on par. I guess sometimes these type of things they do like a collective effort and saying this one individual is getting this whatever the pay rate is, $18 or what have you, and the rest of us are getting whatever it is, nickels or whatever it is. I guess sometimes having a group effort, I see how some people say that's constructive, but I totally understand the logic of what you said to her. That did come to mind. Sometimes people say it's better if we can get a whole group to go in and do it together, but that can be really difficult to organize and everybody might not, you know, be on board with it. It can be difficult to get all that together, get everybody on the same page, as they say, to coordinate that sort of effort. Other folks?
Yeah, correct.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry about that.
Real quick. No, the reason why I told her to go individually is because, like I told her, her friends can go individually, but it's better to go individually because, you know, a lot of bosses, they'll tell you, all right, I'll give you a raise, but don't tell the others. It's easy for you to get it individually like that than for him to be a group at one time, you know? So that's why I told her that kind of strategy. So I appreciate it.
That makes total sense. I completely understand. I have heard that too, and particularly with the climate, because I think they had a lot of different reports over the past 30 days or so talking about that increased efforts to have salaries public to make sure that everybody knows what everybody is getting, at least the lie that they're trying to combat, having that sort of inequality in wages where you got people doing the exact same position, but this person is making substantially more than this person, where they have the same job, are doing the same things. So, yeah, that's good information to know. That's why I encourage folks to be listening. When Pia, and I think even other listeners have said, if you listen to headphones or what have you on the job, to make sure that you don't have the music up so loud that you can't hear what's happening around you. Because sometimes just, you know, you're there. It's not even that they're talking to you, but just because you're alert and paying attention, you can overhear things like that. And that can have a substantial impact. I hope your ex-partner gets that raise. Other folks that have a hand up, if you have commentary, questions on what has been presented thus far, if you have your own situation you want to discuss, hands are, if you have a hand up, line should be open.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Greetings to you, the host, the callers, and the listeners. I've decided that I'll refer to myself as Mhandisi, as Keith Swahili for engineer. I haven't finished my degree at school, but there's a number of reasons that I haven't finished it. A few semesters, or more than one semester, my money came in late. So the residual money that I would get from financial aid, it would come in late on more than one semester. And because of that, I wouldn't be able to get my books until late because I was planning to get my books with the money that came in from this residual money. And I found out that it was happening to a lot of Black people, too, at this particular university. And that's one thing that I say is a racist act. But there was other things that also prevented me from finishing the school. And it wasn't that I didn't understand the information, because I do understand the information. But it would just be things that are even happening outside of school, but I would contribute that to directly to racist white supremacists. But the other thing that I was wanting to mention, was even, again, with the schooling, I've been wanting to do bioengineering and or genetic engineering. And ultimately, I want to do genetic engineering. But it's been difficult for me to find where they have that program. And even when I did find a few schools that had that program, I would call them and ask them about their program, the genetic engineering. And they wouldn't give me the information. I'm almost sure they can tell by my voice that I'm a Black male. But they wouldn't give me the information that I was looking for. And again, I know how to ask a direct question, so it wasn't that I was being confusing. They just would not give me the information that I was wanting, so that I know how I can get this genetic engineering degree. The other thing is I want to open an engineering school, but again, I don't have my degree, so that makes things incredibly difficult to do. And then the last thing that I was wanting to say was that my mother, she has a doctorate degree, but a lot of white people will not refer to her as doctor when they say her name. They won't give her that title, but they say doctor when they speak to other white people who have a doctorate degree. And then so my question would be, do people who have doctorate degrees, when they announce their name, do they say, "Hi, this is Dr. So-and-so," or is that not the way that people introduce themselves? I'm trying to figure out how she can get them to, or force them to, give the respect of the title, since she's done the work to get the title, and all the other white people who have the title are getting the respect of being called that. Thank you.
Wow, that is long-running aspect of white terrorism, disrespect of white people's names and titles that they have labored and invested a lot of time and money to obtain to get those jobs and what have you. I think some folks have mentioned this before. I think just pointing it out, Dr. whatever, you know, Dr. Brown, Dr. Joseph, that's my name, and just say that. I think some other people have made sure that they include doctor on everything that's theirs. So Dr. So-and-so and so-and-so is on their email when it goes out. Doctor is included on their checks and what have you. They'll have it on everything. If you have like a nameplate on your desk or on your door, doctor is included there. If you have anything, if you have an online presence, if they have a website for your company or what have you, you make sure you get doctor there too. That's what I would encourage. And particularly if other people, like you were saying, you know, white people that have obtained, they have these titles, doctor and this, that, and the other, and they get referred to as doctor, and then they say that every time. Yeah, just say that, doctor. And you don't have to be nasty about it. Same thing, you know, I've said before, when they, whites, when they're mispronouncing our name and that have you, or coming up with these little nicknames and other thing, I put all that in the same thing, just disrespect of your title, just another way to show that, to show their disdain for black people, and to do it in a more subtle manner. But just, you know, call that out every time, not in a rude or curt way, just doctor. And you, I mean, however, whatever you feel comfortable in terms of presenting it, you know, I worked really hard. I'm proud of my degree. Make sure I get that in every time. You can say it that way, or, you know, whatever you're comfortable with in terms of fits your personality and how you normally speak. But that's my suggestion on how to deal with it. And I think that's a lot of black people, as you were saying, who experience that, where they're trying to go and get, you know, their degrees and these other certificates and what have you that whites say you got to have to proceed and get a good job and do something in the world. And they make it really, really difficult for you to get that education. I've seen that consistently. I think there's even a large body of research on a lot of things like that, that white people do to make it deliberately difficult for black people to get that education, to finish the process. Other folks that we've not heard from, if you have a hand up, a line should be open. And again, this is not the broadcast for spectators. So if you're listening in, feel free, chime in. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Heard two folks. I guess I'll take... caller in Florida. We haven't heard from you yet, sir.
Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to us, the hosts, the listeners and callers. I wanted to start out with an incident that's been going on this week. I had a vacation last week, and when I got back this week, I was informed before I got back that there was going to be someone who was going to be starting another job, who put in their what's called a 2-week notice, and well, it's about to be Friday tomorrow, and it was supposed to be her last day was next Thursday, I believe, because she's going to be starting with something where she can be working from home, and she has 4 sons, so you know she'll be able to be closer to them. But what was interesting was that she has been pretty much at odds with the powerful white people at my place of employment. And what changed from her last day being next Thursday ended up being her last day was supposed to be this Friday, or pretty much tomorrow. Then apparently she's sent out an email today saying that today was going to be her last day after her lunch break. So before today, maybe like yesterday, they pretty much found her replacement while she was still there before, you know, it got to her last day, I guess, to get the person trained up. And it was a white female from across the hall. So I guess they just, you know, transferred her, I mean, without even an interview or, you know, any kind of way to have a vetting process or, you know, whatever they do to make it seem or to make sure that a person is, you know, able to be, you know, qualified for the job. They just sent this person over there wow, this person, the black female, was almost done with her time at the office. And yesterday was her first day starting, and our supervisor comes up to us saying, hey, did you guys see that email about, you know, this person, this new girl coming to start over here? And we were just flabbergasted, confused, that's the word right there, confused, and not really informed that this decision was made. And I seen a powerful white person walking through the hallway, you know, both directions. Okay, so the email came out from our supervisor, and then she told us in person, do we know about this? And, you know, we were saying, no, we didn't know anything about that. And I knew who this other person was who was supposed to be replacing the black female. And, you know, for some reason, I just had a conversation with a coworker, you know, I speak to outside the job about the racial issue. And, you know, I said that I have a suspicion that my supervisor already knew that this was going to happen, but she approached us in the way of being deceitful, like she didn't know. I guess, you know, I just couldn't help but think that way, because it's like you kind of have to think that way and under these conditions. But she seemed like she was, you know, playing like she was uninformed about it. But, you know, this black female said today was going to be her last day, because she was very shocked that they were just moving a white person, as you know, while she was packing up, so they can get her to train her before, you know, she leave or whatever. So this person just left today. Pretty much, I guess she shocked the other people there and didn't think that she was going to come in tomorrow. So that was the first thing that I was noticing. And the second, I wanted to save this one for last. A couple weeks ago, I mentioned on here about an incident at City Hall across the street where this black male, I guess he attempted to rape a white woman. And there was a conversation that took place. I forgot to share this. I was thinking about it. And, like, I had my head turned, like I was at my desk, and you made that point about having on headphones and listening to what's going on around you. Like, it was two white women discussing this because the issue was still fresh. It had just happened. And they was, I guess, talking about them being approached and women being approached in the area, the close area. So she, one of them was saying that she was in the car and someone approached her. And, you know, they was agreeing with each other, like, yeah, you have to be careful. And one of them said, you know, like what was something? And then she said, hey, look at me, look at me. Now, why would she say, look at me, when they standing close to each other, unless she was trying to describe what race the person is? Like, I don't know if people get what I'm saying. Like, if you can envision this, you have two people discussing something, but you don't have your eyes on them, you know, but they know a black person in front of them, so they don't want to use the term, was he black? Like, I don't know, you know, if you pretty much get what I'm saying, but they said that, like, speaking in code, like, they didn't think I would detect what they were saying. Like, that's what I suspect what this woman was saying. Like, look at me. And, you know, so she can say, well, was he black? Like, I think that's what she said. But, you know, I always wanted to ask you that. That's like, do you get what I'm trying to say?
Let me make sure. Excuse me. Let me make sure I'm understanding you correctly. You said that these two... Excuse me, I'm about to die. So these two white women, they're having a conversation about this, I guess, alleged rape or whatever that happened a while back that you mentioned already on the program, or sexual attack, whatever it was. And they're having this conversation. You got to be careful, you know, such and such. You just never know. And I guess one of the white women was not looking directly at the other white woman. And she said, look at me, so that they could now have eye contact. They're looking at each other so that she could then, in a quieter tone, say, what race was he? Am I understanding you correctly? That's what you think happened?
Yes, sir. That's when I greatly suspect them. That's what it had to be that because, you know, they were, you know, clearly this other, this younger white woman was listening, but I think she may have been writing something. But she said, look at me, instead of just saying, you know, well, was it a black person? So she was trying to communicate something, but she knew that I was sitting right there in front of them. So she didn't want to say the term black. I think that's what that meant.
It definitely could be. I think white people are that slick. Like, they're not ignorant about racism, and they are very attuned to codifying and just being mindful about how they talk about those sort of incidents. And if this is, I mean, that's you in Florida, for God's sake. Like, they have lynched all kinds of black people, Claude Neal and all kinds of black people, for you looked at a white woman or you thought about her. So, I mean, that's whole history of that in your part of the world. But it wouldn't surprise me at all. That seems very, very lucid and might just have been a brilliant catch on your part that you kind of sniffed out that was what was happening. They didn't want, you know, you to catch on to their conversation as they were talking about raping niggers.
Yeah, sir, because I just couldn't help but think that it's like they couldn't have been talking about any other anything that would make her go silent like that. Like, she said, look at me, and she didn't say nothing else. It was either she was trying to mouth it, like, you know, not speak and speak with sound, like speak, like read my lips, basically, almost trying to, like what they call, well, not really playing charades, but just read my lips, basically. I guess not to use a metaphor, but not to, you know, say the word, because he is going to catch it. Even though I may have had headphones on, but I still heard it, basically. So I was like, ha, they was trying to go on a description because, see, they already had released that picture, and they released, like, 3-4 different angles of the person. I mean, it was very intense on them getting that classification, like, you know, black male and 6'1", 5'11". There was this very keen on the details of the description, and that term black male was used like first. They wanted to make sure they got that out. So I think that's what they were talking about. Just they want me to figure it out.
You might be correct. And got to get another illustration if you're going to have those headphones on. Very important. I know some people have said that they are so smooth with it that they'll just have the earbuds in, but they don't have anything playing just because it keeps whites from disrupting them and talking to them or what have you. And they can still hear what's happening around them. If you do want to listen to something, just have it on low enough that you get the same effect. You can hear what it is you're listening to, and you can hear what's happening around you. You might get, seems like some people got some gems from just paying attention to what's conversations that are happening around you. And a lot of that can happen if you, you know, are just alert, paying attention, and you understand racism. With the first, that was super tacky. I didn't want to just gloss over that. And not that I'm surprised about them just going and nabbing any old white person to get a job. I mean, that's done all the time. And I think I've heard this consistently. It may be false, but I have every reason to suspect that it's true. Most of the jobs are not even advertised. Most of the jobs are just internal hires where the whites are, you know, hooking up at the beauty salon or the spa, the golf course or the lunchroom or what have you, and just, oh, you know, hey, Ellen, you want a job? Right on. We'll get rid of this nigger and put you in. No problem. Like, that's, you know, that's what the plantation is. But, and I mean, that's even kind of cliche to get the black person to train up the white person that's going to take their job as you help them on the way up the ladder. Like, that's wow. But the tackiness of it all. And I suspect you might even have been 2-for-2. You might have been correct about the white supervisor, manager, whoever it was, even though they were pretending that they didn't know that this big change was going to happen so quickly, that they did, in fact, know, because that's been my experience, too, in the workplace, particularly I'm not saying every single white person, but the higher up that you go, people that are in management and that sort of thing, most of the time they know. A lot of times they'll know things way in advance, but it's been my experience. White people, they know, and they tend to be very informed. So you might have been 2-for-2. She might have been just lying and trying to act like, oh, yeah, I had no idea all this was happening. I was just blindsided like you all. Wow, so what a crazy June has been. She knew. They sent her the memo last week that they do that sort of tackiness all the time, too. Other folks have commentary that they would like to share. If you have not spoken at all, if you have a hand up, your line should be open. If you want to comment on anything that you've heard thus far, if you have your own situation, feel free.
Yeah, may I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Hey, Gus, this is Anonymous in Los Angeles. Again, like I said, man, I've called a few times. No, I've only called once, but I do appreciate this platform, very informative. And I'll just give you a an update on a new company that I'm, a new plantation that I'm working for right now. Just observations. I've been in the IT world. I'm pretty much the only IT person in this company. It's a startup. You know, I see it's going to be pretty successful. And I came on as a temp, but I've been there since maybe February. But they kind of, they're playing games like they normally do at these different jobs, these different companies, plantations or whatever, because they said that they would hire me full time after, you know, X amount of days, 45 days. It's been past 45 days. I'm still not full time, but that's cool. I mean, yeah, full time, but that's cool. It's fine because, like I suggested, any young person listening, you know, definitely have your own thing that you do on the side. If you're going to dedicate X amount of hours to a company, at least give yourself 1 or 2 hours per day where you're building up yours. And I've, you know, I've always been doing that. And, working for them, it's cool. It's, you know, allowing me to pay bills on time, you know, versus working for myself and in that matter. But this organization, essentially, I'm not going to say what it is, but for the most part, it's a startup, and there's you know, not too many people of color, classified Black, that work there in the company. So I started work, and then a few weeks later, there's a young lady. She's a non-white Black woman. She's a little younger than me. She started as well, temp, same thing. She's an assistant to the VP, and the guy, you know, he's okay or whatever, and, you know, it doesn't seem like it's too much of a task for her. From her experience, from what she told me, her experience, it doesn't seem like it would be hard for her to accomplish what she needs to have done. Long story short, she's been there a few weeks, and me being in IT, I got wind of some changes, and they wanted to pretty much, essentially, they demoted her. I wouldn't even say demoted. She's VP. She's assistant to the VP. Then she. Now she's the basically receptionist for the entire office. So, and she still, I think she still has the duties to do, she's obligated to do the VP work, to assist the VP. And I got wind of it because, you know, we have to pretty much set up her VoIP phone, set up her desk, her computer, et cetera. And so I just put her to the side. I don't know if this is codified or not, whatever. But I just put it to the side and just said, "Hey, you know, they're going to move you." And this, I just kind of gave her a little bit of a heads up. You know, after a while, she did get moved over, and she was not pleased with it because, you know, it's more of a task for her, and it's not in line with what she wants to do with the organization anyway. She started out as the assistant to the VP, but she has experience with like IT, mainly programming, anything dealing with Java and HTML, you know, that type of stuff. And she was hoping to move up within the organization, utilizing her skills that she has in that arena. But they pretty much have her as a the welcoming person, the person who takes in the shipping and receiving, things like that. And then I think she still has stuff that she has to do with the VP, assisting with the VP. But I gave her a heads up, and I think that kind of helped her out because she's pretty much put her bid in with a few different companies to, she's basically looking to leave, which, you know, hey, you know, if you're not satisfied here, I suggest shaking the spot too, you know what I'm saying? And another incident, just real brief, it's funny, I find this funny, but, you know, like I said, I'm in IT, I'm temp. They have a permanent contractor who works there. He's a middle-aged, non-black, white, classified white guy, you know, and he comes in twice a week. I'm there pretty much five times a week. He's there twice a week. They had an issue with the, the time clock? Yeah, time clock or whatever. Basically, their system for people clocking in, they had an issue with the, I guess it's like, it's almost like a biometrics. You put your finger to clock in and or whatever. So for the most part, went down there to investigate. The HR manager, she's a Asian female, wanted me to help her investigate the incident that happened where there was an employee who couldn't log in. So we had another employee, you know, tap the scanner with their thumbprint or whatever. It's biometrics, essentially. It worked. The person who did it was a Latina, classified Hispanic female. It worked for her fine. The person who had the issue, we had them come over and tap or put their finger on the biometric sensor. And, you know, he's a brother. He's black or classified black male. And it didn't work for him. Okay, so, you know, he takes off or whatever. And, you know, we said, we'll find out what's going on. The system seems to work fine. There's really no issues. So the contractor, who's pretty much above me, if you were to classify him or in the organization, because he's been there longer and he has more experience or whatever with the system. And he said, hey, to the HR manager, well, you know, the issue could be, and he, you know, he looked at me and said, no offense, you know, if you have the darker your pigmentation or the more melanin, well, he didn't say melanin, he said the blacker you are, sometimes there's issues with these type of, there's issues with this system because of, you know, maybe he's a little bit darker, which I mean, I get it. I understand with biometrics, the system with biometrics, you know, it could be issues because, for the most part, I mean, it anything dealing with IT biometrics or whatever, it, you know, the psychopaths, they designed it. So of course it's going to benefit. It's going to work well for them. The more melanated you are, if you're using like facial recognition or whatever, it may not work to your advantage. But nonetheless, he basically brought that up and said, hey, well, you know, and he looked at me and said, no offense. And I'm like, I didn't respond or anything. I don't know if he was expecting a response or anything like that. But he said, you know, that could be the issue, but we're going to further look into it, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I just kind of brushed it off. I didn't really, you know, respond to it or whatever. I'll, you know, classify that as being tacky. But I mean, you know, there is some truth to it, simply because, like I said, these psychopaths, they design these biometric systems and it's going to benefit, you know, them. And that's pretty much it. I mean, you know, just wanted to share that. I do appreciate your platform, sir. And, you know, listeners, yeah, everyone, keep contributing and, you know, tell your stories. That's pretty much it. Appreciate it.
Thank you for sharing. I guess the comment about the biometrics, a listener just shared that. They were saying that a lot of the, I guess some of the facial recognition technology or new software that they're coming out with, that one instance, a white person was using it, worked really well. Non-white person came in, didn't work. And they were saying that same, they were observing that same sort of thing happening where this software, the people that are making it and test subjects and what have you, it's all being designed for the benefit of and designed by and for the benefit of racists. Non-white people are not figured in at all. But yeah, I would just duly noted that he said it. I wouldn't have anything to say about it either way. Just let me know when it's fixed so that it will work for me moving forward. I thought it was important before you got to the biometrics not working, when you discussed you started out working here as a temp worker, and it's, you know, been great to give you a little bit of, I guess, financial stability being in this environment. That's grand. While trying to do the best that we can under terrible conditions. And I think you said that they were playing a game, like they had said that they were going to bring you on full time as to get you so you don't have to be a temporary employee anymore. And that's just one. I think it's important. This is not a game. You know, our livelihood and, you know, your ability to take care of yourself, your family, and expand, do other things. That's money you could be investing in your own project. That is racism, white supremacy. It immediately reminded me of Thomas in New York and a number of our other callers who had talked about this is a long running pattern. I think Thomas in New York specifically talked about on one of his jobs, they would hire black people, temp workers, to come in, work at this firm. And I think the law in this area was that you could only be a temp worker for 90 days or whatever it is. And after 90 days, you have to bring the person on full time. What they would do, they would wait until your 89th day and then let you go. And then hire you back so they can get another 90 days of working you as a temp worker. And they were doing this deliberately with the black employees that work there. Thomas in New York talked about this. This is way, way back years ago. But this is a long running pattern. I suspect that it's worldwide. So that way you don't have to pay black workers full time compensation and all the benefits and everything else. You can give them the lowest amount of compensation possible, and you don't get any of the benefits and everything else that would go with that full time employment. Also, with the second segment where you talked about kind of giving the heads up, when you got wind that this I think it was a black female employee that they were not going to be progressing, moving ahead with her in that position, that she was kind of going to be moved to a different spot that she wasn't pleased with. I think if, and I've said this consistently, we have a lot of non-white people that try the best that they can. According to what they reported, they try as they can to share constructive information with other black people on the job. That is great. The only thing I say is, you know, hey, I United Independent, I know the work situation, you at least I say it's very important to keep in mind. This is not a situation where I would say you have allies, homies, partners. It's going to be United Independent. Every person there who is non-white is not necessarily going to have your best interest at heart and that sort of thing. But hey, if you get information that you think is constructive and you want to share it with another black person, that's great. That's black self-respect, in my opinion. So that's great. And giving her some information to so that she can adequately plan for her future. If this is not going to be something that is pleasing to me anymore, then let me get my resume updated so that I can get the heck out of here. That is tremendous. Great job, sir. Great black self-respect. If other folks have commentary, if you have a hand up, if you have either your own situation you want to discuss, or if you want to comment on what's been discussed so far, if you have a hand up, feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, okay. Greetings, everybody. I have a couple of things that I wanted to share. The first for the, this is Emmy. I'm the one in the DMV area. And I remember I shared with you all about the biology professor who slow blinked me every time I ask a question. Well, what's so interesting is just an observation. We took an exam and I wanted to review my exam, but you don't get it back. So I had to go to her office. And she has an altar, and on her altar, she has a black woman, and she has all this black woman stuff in her office. She had oils and everything. And to people who don't like really, you know, pay attention to that kind of stuff, you wouldn't think of it and like think that's an altar. But this white woman actually has an altar with black female images all around her office. And I just wanted to share that with y'all. Some of y'all might find that interesting. I told you all that I've been practicing my own ability to be you know, deceptive and not always be like having to tell the truth and stuff like that. And one of the things that I observed, especially in the classroom setting in this particular time, is there's a high concentration of white people, and white people are extremely competitive. And I think it's like, it's almost laughable for me when I, you know, look back on my own coming into you, to actually think that it had anything to do with white people needing to see that we were smart or hardworking, or that we're so-called, quote-unquote, different. White people don't care about that at all. You're a nigga and that's it. And so anyway, like, pretty much, and they're very competitive. Like, if you're even better than them, then they have an issue. So they like to ask a lot of questions. Getting to the point of my observation is that white people like to ask very, like, outright questions too, like, well, what did you get? How do you think that you did? And they'll try to corner you and all that good stuff. And I just lie and just keep it moving, because I don't want any of these people knowing anything about me, how I think, or anything like that. I don't even want them knowing my name. So, but that's just an observation to other people who are like in school and stuff like that. Don't ever share information with white students at all. A white female tried. It was funny because I sit in the same place all the time. So I was a little late today, and all of a sudden it was like I noticed like all of the desks and stuff were kind of like pushed in my area, and I was like, and this like it was like a white woman like squeezed this desk behind mine. I was like, "But you've never sit here. What are you doing here?" But anyway, she was there, and then at the end of class, she tried to ask me for my notes, and I was like, "I'm late all the time. I didn't even get those notes. I had those notes, but I'm not giving you my notes." So, but okay, so now with that, but I have a actual real serious story that I'm going to share with you all real quickly. So I don't know what's going on. I don't know if like the universe is maneuvering in such a way to put me in certain predicaments, or maybe I'm attracting it, or who knows whatever's going on. But things are escalating at my overnight weekend concierge gig in the posh DC metro or, you know, area. And these white people are getting crazy. And I think, and it can be nothing. It could just be the fact that like I'm there and it's getting warmer and they're drinking more, but it's getting ridiculous. So I know I shared with you all when I was slipping and I let that white guy who was bleeding from his head in. Well, after that, like I completely, you know, had a conversation with myself and got, you know, in alignment with myself and got more serious to make sure I'm not putting myself in a dangerous situation here. So I was like, time to put all the rules back in place, like read that by the book. This is how we're doing it. So last weekend, this white guy comes to the glass door. Let me try to be quick with this. Comes to the glass door. I see him, but he doesn't see that I see him because he's like busy messing with this keypad thing, trying to call the front desk. But you actually have to use your cell phone to dial this particular number that's written on the glass that you have to look at to call the front desk. And then I can let you in once I confirm who you are. I'm not letting anybody in who I cannot confirm who they are or what they're supposed to do here. Like if they're supposed to meet someone or deliver something. I'm not opening the door for anybody. I don't care because I'm just not putting myself in that situation. So he unfortunately had to deal with this reinforcement of the policy to protect myself, because I'm not really tripping about the people in the building. I'm tripping about someone coming up in here and harming me. So I'm like, finally, like I get over there because now we have to talk to the glass. I'm telling him he needs to call the number. He tells me he doesn't have a cell phone. Then he starts to bark at me that I need to open the door. And I tell him I'm not opening the door until I know who you are and what you're here for. Because I was so, I don't want to say appalled, but it caught me, like it was interesting to observe this white man bark an order at me. And like really expect for me to just be, oh, my bad. Let me just open the door. Absolutely not. It's like 2-3 o'clock in the morning. I don't know you, you know? So anyway, I got it recorded to get to the point of like what happened. So let me tell you, he eventually, we had to talk to the glass. He got a number incorrect. So when I went to verify, they were like, we don't know him. When I went back, he said, oh, there's this thing for me. I was able to find this envelope that had his name and confirm his name on his ID. So once I was able to do that and realized, okay, he should be here, I allowed him in. And Gus, can I play the recording?
Let's hear it.
All right.
Inhumanity. We're human beings. My name is Matthias Martin. No, thank you. My name is Matthias Martin.
He's trying to
you don't want to recognize my humanity? That my name is Matthias Martin. You know what? You refuse to introduce yourself to me as a human being. You refuse to introduce yourself as a human being to me.
Do you have all that you need?
I have what I need.
Okay.
I have a horrendous, absolutely horrendous experience in terms of this building. What's your name? What's your name?
I'm not giving you my name.
You're not going to give me your name?
No.
Okay. You're the worst customer service employee that I've ever experienced in my life. In my life. You're not going to give me your name. You have no concern about my humanity. You're treating me like shit. You're treating me like I don't belong here.
How are you? Is he coming down? Okay.
It's horrendous what you're doing. It's horrendous. This building is
expensive. Do you live here, sir?
No, I don't live here.
Okay.
All right. So other people are coming in. So those are the people that I'm addressing, because if no one was like coming in, and I think I probably would have just left him there at the closet. Well, left him there at the front desk and like went back to the package inventory area, AKA the closet. But I had to actually still let people in and deal with the people. And so that's who you hear me like asking them, did they find everything they needed? And it's such and such coming down. But it doesn't actually end there. So he goes away upstairs. He follows the people upstairs and he comes back hours later. And I have a recording for that, but I feel like I've talked too long because now I'm just recording everything all the time. And I make sure to let you. Okay. Now to speak about how I'm being codified about it. I'm not giving him my name because I feel like I'm the only overnight weekend concierge. So that's all you have to refer to me as. I'm not giving nobody my name. He kept saying stuff about like humanity and whatnot. I'm not shaking no people's hands. It doesn't even matter what you look like. I don't feel like touching your hands and I don't have to. I think it's something to be said about them having that much visceral animosity towards you, but be like trying to shake your hand. White people, that's what they do. It's always two different things. They can never just be, you know what I mean? Like, unilateral or like a line. They feel this way, they're not gonna, you know, it's like some subversive type thing. So no, I didn't shake his hand. I haven't heard anything about this, although I've made a note. So I told him if he wanted to complain, and in the second recording you could hear that, but I'm not gonna play it. He wants to know like the property management company. He actually comes back down, like this is at like 6:30 now. I asked me for my name again. I told him I'm not giving him my name. If he wants to complain or say whatever, he can talk to the company. I made a note of it. A very detailed note. But what's more important about this very detailed note is, look, if the company is like, well, look, you know, this is not going to work or whatever, that's cool, fine and dandy. They don't know that I have these recordings, but I will totally let them hear, like, look, these are the people that y'all are asking me to figure out how to, like, keep cool and keep calm. People have been drinking. People are on drugs. I can tell when people have been drinking and when people have been doing whatever, whatnot before they get to me. And I told them I'm still not letting nobody in. So don't try to change the policy. And now it's like try to give me some code where I'm letting in white people, but not letting in black people so that they don't, you know, get irate. I told them if they want it to be, you know, streamlined, fix that kiosk thing outside so that people can dial directly to the front desk. And in which case we can bypass all of that confusion and I can quickly look them up and get them where they're going. But in terms of me going to work, doing anything different, I'm not doing anything differently. You're not getting in the building until I know who you are and where you're going. And that's because I have to look out for me. So thank you all for listening.
Wow. What an intense workplace situation. We had a recording and everything. I would just emphasize the danger of this situation, the danger of racism, white supremacy in general. But certainly I would say within the past few years or so, it seems like there's so many instances where whites became lethally, not just violent, like lethally aggressive in seconds. And that's something that we emphasize. And I'd say particularly anybody, your work situation, you know, causes you to be out and about late, where you're dealing with people late at night, where they might have been drinking or under the influence of drugs, both, whatever the case is, just these are dangerous situations, a very dangerous environment, to keep that in mind. And particularly, I know with Emmy, you shared with us before, you know, they're people who visit the building regularly, who go around and brag about, oh yeah, I'm going to kill these people if they, you know, mess the door up again, or, you know, forget to pick their mail up on time, going around and bragging about that. So, I mean, this is a very hostile, violent, dangerous environment, in my opinion. So absolutely do everything that you think prudent to look out for your personal safety. I, too, am a big proponent of the not shaking hands, especially in that sort of environment. We don't need to shake hands. You know, whatever you need to do to facilitate you, you know, getting out of the building or getting to your room, wherever you're supposed to be. We don't need to shake hands and do all of that. The white guy coming in, I thought that was great, having your recorder at the ready. We talked about that before. If you have a recorder or any other instrument you're going to use to practice so that you can utilize it quickly, because things can get tense and things can happen quickly. So to make sure you're prepared if you need to get anything recorded. But yeah, I think it sounds great. Just make sure that you keep in mind, and I think we talked about this before too, with some of these whites who've come down and been nasty and rude, where they end up having a vendetta. Like, you know, I yelled at this nigga wench, and she still didn't do right, didn't do what I told her to do. She thinks she is going to ignore yelling white man. He might have that in mind and say, yeah, I'm going to keep that in mind. I'm going to be looking out for her in the future. I think he had an incident with another white guy. It was similar, where he would come back and be mumbling and talking under his breath about you as he was walking by. Just keep that in mind to make sure you remain vigilant. But yeah, I think what you did was tremendous. Great job recording, and just make sure that you are looking out for your personal safety if you're noting things are getting worse. And I think that happens too in the summer too. People drink more, they stay out late, and so the rowdiness could be staunch and consistent until September. We'll hope not, but that could be the case. We'll see. Other folks, if you have commentary, if you have suggestions on what you've heard thus far, if you have your own commentary you would like to share, line should be open. Feel free.
Going to be heard.
I heard Stacy in the UK, and I heard retired firefighter. I just want to pause because there are other people who dialed in. I just want to make sure I haven't missed anyone we missed completely. Is anybody we haven't heard from at all?
May I be heard?
Okay, I heard two people. Female caller, proceed.
Hello. Hello, everyone. Thank you for taking my call. This is Red from Ohio. I just wanted to just speak about an observation that I had. It was actually truly a Dr. Welsing moment. I had to go inside the office because, like I said before, I don't typically have to go inside the office when I have to work. But this time I had to go inside, and, of course, white people, they love to have their loud conversations. Well, this time my supervisor, some people were coming over to him because I wasn't sitting that far away from him. Some people were coming over to him just speaking about different work stuff and also personal stuff. But the recurring theme was how good his tan was. And he got to the point to where he was like, yes, I have it going on, just talking about how his tan was. And he was saying how he went to this non-white country, and that's the reason why he has his nice tan color. But he then also goes in to talk about his significant other. He, like I said before in the past, he always seems to, he might ask you about your day or something about yourself. And with me, like I said, my code is I always say nothing or give something that's really, really vague or really, really short. And then that's when he'll proceed to tell everything about what he did that weekend and what he's planning on doing, all that nonsense. So he starts to talk about his
significant other. I always assumed it was another white person. Well, he finally says, oh, and by the way, my significant other is apparently, I'm assuming it's, he said the country from where she was from, which typically is a non-white country. And she was saying in a joking way, like, oh, well, I'll make fun of her for being so pale looking. And then he started to talk about like her daughter, which I'm assuming is also a non-white person. I don't think they had a child together. And he was talking about how wonderful her color is. And then he tried to, it was funny because he was like, oh yeah, she's basically, I guess she would kind of look like, and he was kind of like looking over the group to see who he could compare her color to and couldn't find anybody. So he kind of just trailed off, and that's where the conversation ended. But it was, I thought that it was, I felt bad for the non-white, his non-white significant other, because he said, oh yeah, I talk about her like this all the time. She's used to it, because somebody else had said in the group, they're like, oh, well, I'm sure she didn't like that comment about, you know, you basically calling her pasty. And he's like, oh no, I say those type of things all the time. So I'm like, wow, you are really practicing racism. Like we've talked about, you're practicing racism against your significant other. The last thing is that one person in the group, one white woman in the group, she's always very, very white looking, not pink, not tan. She's very, very pale. And she kind of turned, and she kind of like looked at the supervisor, and I don't want to say in disgust, but it was almost, I couldn't quite tell if it, because it was really quick. I couldn't quite tell if it was like in disgust or like kind of envious, because she's always very, very, very pale looking. And she is also with a non-white person. So I just wanted to share that. And the last thing was that I did end up mentioning to another non-white person in my same area. I said to him, you know, stay in the question lane. And he kind of concurred, because he was just talking about how he had to basically train a white man, and he didn't know the white man's position. And apparently it was like a higher up type of person. And he was like, you know, instead of, you know, making a lot of statements or being real boastful, he basically was saying, he was asking a lot of questions. So even though it seems like I'm starting to kind of find different things that other non-white people are doing, even though they do seem like they're more confused, but they do still have a little bit of clarity at times. And I've also been practicing just asking more questions, especially when it comes to the white women at my job. So that's all I had to share. Thank you for letting me share.
Wow. How fascinating. Asking questions is great. I'm a big advocate of that under any circumstances. And that in particular, I know you said this is, I guess, your friend or what have you, had to train this white person who I guess was pretty powerful. I think that's a good position to take in that sort of, if you're doing that sort of training where you don't know who the person is that you're training. You don't know if this is, you know, the custodian or the CEO of the company, just using that for perspective. I think that's a very good position to be in. That way you're not, you know, saying anything, you're not making any statements or anything, just asking questions and going through. Great way to function on the job. The comments that the white person was making about, you know, being pasty and then deviating off to his family and what have you, standard cliche. I mean, that's stale old to justify whatever sort of conduct or rude behavior that, oh yeah, I say this to my girlfriend or whatever she is, girlfriend, partner, all the time. And her daughter, it sounds like it might not be his child, but her daughter saying it to her offspring as well. And just the fixation on, I guess, skin lacking melanin. I think that absolutely, you hit that right on the head with a Welsing moment for sure. I would just encourage folks in those sort of work environments. Those are the type of conversations that I would just listen. You can maybe note, but I wouldn't have a whole lot. I wouldn't participate with that, because it sounds like this white guy, in addition to just practicing a lot of racism, he can eat this up. I don't know if he has his photos in his wallet where he can show off his family and children or whatever, his girlfriend or whatever she is. I wouldn't even engage in any of that. It would just be, duly noted, and right back on the grind, continuing with the work. I would just have that logged. That would be included in my workplace journal for the day, that this happened and this was the nature of the conversation. This is what he had to say. Appreciate that, Red, in Ohio. I think it was a male caller. Did you speak up simultaneously with Red? Were you going to speak as well that we hadn't heard from before?
Robbie Hurt?
Yes, sir.
Good evening. 2812 from VA. Hope everybody's having a good evening. A couple of observations at work. Last week, my manager, I'm in the mortgage business, manager came down to do a little, I guess he wants to do a little checkup or whatever, and we're sitting in this meeting, and I needed some help on a deal that we were kind of running the numbers through, very large deal, and this guy was literally sitting there, and I'm talking to him, and he's just yawning. I mean, upset with he's just yawning obsessively, and I'm like, is there something wrong with this guy? And it's just rude and tacky, and he can tell, because at first I said, not getting a lot of sleep or something, you know, slick, and he was like, I don't know what's going on, and I was like, man, that was bad. So then I had another meeting on Tuesday. I had to drive, and it was myself, another white woman, and him, and he does the same thing in this meeting, and even the white woman is sitting there saying, now this is kind of rude, like, we're trying to talk about, you know, a lot of, you know, constructive information, talk about commissions and money and what we're doing well. And this guy's just yawning. And even she kind of looked at me like, why is this guy yawning so much? So that's just an observation, him just being tacky all over the place, as usual. But in my drive, I try to do my best to support non-white, specifically black businesses, specifically if I'm driving somewhere to where I'm not familiar with the area, and this part of Virginia that I was in, I was able to find I love Caribbean, so I was able to find a Caribbean restaurant, and I went there, actually supported them, and gave an extra tip to try to help the business out, and it's very funny. I know I heard somebody talk about this before, but I think it was Pam, but just being pleasant to other non-white people under these conditions is extremely helpful. And I'm making this suggestion because I stole it from somebody else. I asked the woman, I said, hey, I'd like to give an additional $10 tip. And she said, why? And I said, I just want to figure out a way that I can help. You have a lot of people working back there, and I'm sure the business could use the funds, or it could be helpful. And she said, oh, okay, yeah, come on. And it put a smile on her face. The person behind me put a smile on her face. And it was really, really constructive. So anytime, I know sometimes we always don't have the funds or the resources to do things like that, but even small things can really, really help. Enough, the last thing I'll mention is that I had a meeting with a non-white male today. He was giving me some investment advice, really constructive information. He was willing and open to share. Then I had another meeting with a white woman. And she was giving me some information on helping people. They were like a little business to where they help people clean up credit. And I asked her a question, and she said, oh, well, we do that for free. And I'm like, really? And she was giving me some more constructive information on how to help clients and stuff like that. And I said, you guys don't charge people like other companies do? And she was like, no, we don't charge anybody. We just do this for free. And it always goes back to make me think about what Mr. Fuller says, is you know, the people that need the most help should get the most help. And these people have the information. They could give it out, but they're just not willing to. And that was another example. I'm sure that this woman has probably been deceitful in the past, or maybe today she decided not to be. But I'm like, this is free information that a lot of non-white people, specifically in the area of finances and credit, pay a lot of money for when this is free. So I was able to get some ideas and things from her that she does to help her clients, and I'm going to do my best to pass this information on to non-white people, because in the area of finances and credit and things of that nature, a lot of non-white people get taken advantage of because they don't have accurate information. And that's it. I'm done. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. That's phenomenal. And another thing that they'll do a lot of times, the information will be there, but whites, they are tremendous at codifying information. They know how to give you information to make it easy so that you can grasp anything. They got books, Calculus for Dummies, Algebra for Dummies. They could do that for whatever it is. Improving Your Credit for Morons. They could do that. Make it a best-selling book and get Steve Hardy to do the promotion and everything. No problem. They don't do that. With Negros, they make it like, oh man, you got to go learn Latin, and we're going to need you to take 5 years of economics, and then we're going to need you to pay $20,000, and maybe we'll give you half the information. Like, that's generally the way it is. And exactly what you just shared, a lot of times, if you just know, if you're white, and you know this other white person, oh yeah, we can knock that out for free, no problem. Got that easy. I'll sit here and hold your hand and get it done. Exactly what you said. A lot of these problems that black people have, white people could solve easily, painlessly, effortlessly. A lot of these problems, they just don't want to. They enjoy practicing racism. Mr. Fuller says that all the time. They like this exactly the way it is. And I think once you can understand that as a black person, we can start making adjustments to our behavior to help try to solve some of these problems. Sounding like what the caller in Virginia is trying to do. Get some of this information and see if you can use it to help out black people. Brilliant. That's, you know, exactly what we need to be doing. Did I hear that correctly? Was it a white person that was in the meeting just yawning and not paying it? Well, I don't know if he was paying attention, but doing all this yawning.
Oh, man, it was terrible. He was yawning and spitting. It was like a combination. It was just bad. He's sitting directly in front of me, and I'm trying to go over information, and it's obsessive. Like, it's every 5 seconds, and I'm like, okay, maybe this guy is a narcoleptic or whatever. I don't know what even you call that, but it was just bad and tacky, just real tacky.
Maybe he's a heroin addict. That's what they say about black people. We got these crackheads in here. Not maybe he's a heroin addict. I mean, he was having, you know, he was fiending for his fix for the day. But that's another one too, because I think a lot of times you're confused about racism, white supremacy, and just not understanding how you can have whites who can come in and do that for something that's serious. I mean, if you're in mortgage, like, this is serious. We're talking about money in here, and you're not. Are you paying attention here? You can do that and still have a job where you can have black people that are immaculately dressed, well-groomed, pen or a tablet in hand, taking notes, paying attention on every word, and, oh, no, you don't want that. Let's get that yawning white dude back in. Let's get that. That's, again, understanding what racism is and how it works. See, we had Stacy in the UK, retired firefighter. Thank you both for your patience. Stacy in the UK, did you want to go first?
Hi, Gus.
Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to give an update on the discussion that I'd had a couple of weeks ago about, I was mentioning Black Staff Network at my organisation. So that is still under discussion, and there is a meeting coming up in a couple of weeks about it. But in the meantime, there's been a lot of, I'd already mentioned that there's been a lot of gameplay in terms of the meeting that's due to take place, who should be attending it, and how people are trying to control that meeting. In addition, there's, you know, the meeting is to discuss whether or not black staff in the organisation should have, or black or BME staff should have, a staff network in the first place, even though there is an existing LGBTQT network and also a women's network. So over the last couple of weeks, there have been various lists drawn up as to who should even be invited to the initial meeting to discuss whether or not BME network should exist. That meeting is going to be chaired by group director. Now, this group director is a non-white male, and he is relatively new to the organisation, and this is the new management team that's been in for a short while, which is why the whole thing is being revisited anyway. he's not been involved in the shortlist, selecting who should come to the meeting. Other people have, including HR. And for me, it's been absolutely fascinating in terms of just getting an insight into the way in which racism operates in an organization in terms of how management maneuvers to control any sense of power, in inverted commas, or not as the case may be, that black staff might gain, how non-white staff are used against each other. So HR, for example, have selected non-white individuals who have a white parent to get involved and lead the process. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that those individuals necessarily identify, you know, that there should be an issue in terms of the fact that they have a white parent, but that it's the fact that management perceived them to be the safer non-white staff. And I do think there's one particular individual who is very challenged and is very well identified until it suits. And she has been heavily involved in organising the meeting. The other people who have been selected would not be the people who would automatically spring to mind as just being very vocal and involved in staffing issues in any way, shape or form. But these individuals are also either very white identified or black individuals who have white partners. I was on the initial one of the lists. I've been told this, I'm not supposed to know. I was on one of the very first lists and my name got taken off. It's now on there. In addition, there are a couple of union reps who are going, but they have, and these are black members of staff, but one of them, one of the union reps who actually is actually not going to the meeting, has informed me that actually the union's position is that BME staffing networks should not be, are not supported by the union. So, I mean, in summary, it's just, the last thing I'll say on that is that even amongst the black staff that are going to the meeting, there are sort of subgroups, and it's just been really fascinating to see the way in which we as black members of staff can be used against each other, and also the way in which HR and other individuals have maneuvered to try and control it. And there was one non-white female who is very white identified who apparently has been asked by HR to try and control the meeting. But you know, all credit to her, she has said she is not comfortable about doing so. And again, I'm not supposed to know this. Gus, I'll stop there because I know I've been talking for a while. I do have a couple of other updates, but only if there's time, obviously. I'll mute my line.
Wow. I guess really quick before I get retired firefighter, I had one question. How did you ascertain that the white manager is suspected racist, that they prefer to have representatives who are non-white, but they have a white parent?
My director is a white female, and this is just me observing how the organization operates and observing her behavior. And she only ever surrounds herself with non-white individuals who have a white parent, who, whether or not they are more confused, I think they're the safer bet for her. That's my observation. It's not to say that there's not times when she doesn't utilize non-white black individuals, but that I think is strategically. This is me just observing her, and there are certain individuals that get put forward as the voice of black staff who I know have said that they've never experienced racism in the organization, and the one particular individual is the one person who has been asked to lead this or organize this meeting, which for me is very telling. and she has been heavily involved in selecting the people who are attending this meeting. So there is just a number of games being played, but those are, you know, this is me observing what goes on in the organization.
Racism being practiced, not games being played, I would say. I guess for people, I think last year we had Puff, I think she asked, you know, why is it significant that a non-white person has a white parent? We're all victims. Everybody is a victim, but I've said consistently it's very significant because racists, they say it's significant, and that ends up being a component of how they operate the plantation and how they manipulate and control victims of white supremacy, all non-white people. I guess, are you a member of the women's staffing group or no?
No, I don't see very much. I went to one meeting. The makeup of that group, I think it is actually led by a non-white black female. However, what I observed at the very early meetings were that, yes, it might be a women's network, but it's not the likes of me that benefit from that network, and I didn't feel very comfortable, so I didn't attend. I don't attend.
Not surprised, just curious. Wow, I think you said you had one more update you were going to get to. Before I nab a retired firefighter and thank him for his patience as well, I said I'm struggling trying to get as many of these written reports that people have shared in as I possibly can. We had another written report for workplace racism. This one is from one of our female listeners. She wrote in, oh no, I think we got another one. People are continuing to add to the list. It's growing. I'm going to see if I can get that in the last. We got about 40 minutes, a little less than 40 minutes before the broadcast concludes. Okay. My company picnic is in 2 days, and I already told my department a month ago I didn't want to attend. As the day gets nearer, my boss keeps trying to guilt trip me into going. She doesn't do this to any of the non-black employees who opted out, just the black ones. It's so bad that she guilt tripped my black coworker into going, although she stated she had plans and did not want to go. My same white female boss seems to be very particular about black females. My black coworkers have confirmed this for me since I'm fairly new. My boss is always trying to give out orders to the black female employees, but will compromise and negotiate with the white ones. My boss constantly assumes we don't know what we are doing and that we need more training, when it is known that she doesn't know what she's doing and has actually been running the department into the ground. We are considered the worst department because of her. My coworkers and I talk about this and came to the conclusion she likes to pick on black females because she, oh my God, what is going on? Like, what in the world? Came to the conclusion that she likes to pick on black females because she's married to a black male. The dynamics of their relationship are very one-sided, and she wears the pants in the relationship. My boss actually clapped at another black female employee who stood up for herself. My work consists of filling out a lot of paperwork and doing extensive investigations into claims. I get like 50 requests in the morning. I usually can finish them in about 2 hours. My white female boss actually called me over and told me I wasn't doing it fast enough. Now I work with two other white employees who take days to finish their work, yet she never rushes them or berates them to go faster. I am not surprised. White women terrorists on the job. I think for that sort of thing too, I would, again, being in the question lane, particularly if you've noticed a discrepancy in terms of the rate at which you're able to get your reports or documents filed and the rate at which other employees, if they have any sort of spreadsheet, I mean, it's all analytics and they got so much data available now. If there's any data on, you know, how long does it take to get a report done? What's the average time for an employee here to get the work done? Does the company have a suggested time? This is how much time we think an employee should take to get these reports done? Those are the types of questions that I would ask if it seems like, you know, she's being nasty and rude with you about, you know, how long you're taking to get any of this information done. Same thing, though, what I said before about, you know, understand, particularly if you've ascertained, like, oh, okay, this race soldier, she is sexually exploiting a black male at home, and then she's going to come in and have all of her vendetta and racist animosity directed at black females and take that out on us all day, or the person who wrote this in specifically about how fast you're getting work done and whatever else she's, you know, griping about on the job. I would, you know, again, stay in the question lane. I would make sure that I do not let her get me upset about anything if she's coming in and name calling and that sort of thing, because it seems like she could be one of those white women to get you riled up and then have an excuse to fire you for saying you were being insubordinate or talking back or whatever other excuses that they come up with. Just be real professional, and I would use email. Anytime that you see this as someone who's verbally rude and likes to do all that yelling and stuff, I would be really tactical about the use of email in asking questions, directing, even addressing. If she comes out and says something really rude, you can even write out what she said in the email. And people have talked about you can include other people. You have lots of options in terms of how you'd like to address that for the person who wrote in. If a retired firefighter, you'd like to proceed, I'll encourage folks, we have about 30 minutes left in the program. If you have comments, if you have suggestions for anything that you've heard thus far, if you have your own situation you want to touch on, do not wait till the last 30 minutes, the last 5 minutes of the program. Go ahead and get your hand up now if you think you have something you would like to share. Firefighter, did you have commentary, sir?
Yes, sir. Just would like to comment on something that I heard, and also some experiences of my own during the course of the week. The first thought comes to mind, I heard someone used in their workplace racism experience, Hispanic woman. Be very, I'm just making a suggestion. I'm not an expert on racism, that's for sure, but from my experiences, be very careful about the quote-unquote identification of Hispanic. It's very confusing. The only thing that I can factor in on what it tells me is a person that speaks Spanish. That's it. Now, we all know that that can either be a white person or a non-white person. You have to be very careful about that. Because I suspect that it's utilized in the same way that some white people will call themselves Jews, and they don't mention the title white more so than they mention the title Jew. Very similar in that aspect. There's even some people who are racially classified and accepted by white people as being white who speak Spanish that even have a swarthy-like appearance, quote-unquote. The director of Dade County Public Schools is a very heavily tanned-looking white male. I would dare say that he identifies himself as Hispanic, which is, you know, like I said, so just be very careful on that. Just a suggestion. I'm not in the position to tell anybody what to do because the retired firefighter makes a lot of mistakes himself. Just a thought. Workplace racism. These are what I classify as a constructive experience. We had a meeting, the football team, the coaches with the senior boys, with their, a lot of them had their parents there. I didn't know what the meeting was going to be about at all. I just showed up. But what it ended up being about was, it was for, at the school, there's a non-white black female, very young, attractive, intelligent, non-white black female who is in charge of making sure that the players are academically eligible for the college level. NCAA in specifics. It is a very complicated process. I've been a coach for 36 years, and I still don't understand it. As far as that concerned, the different process that one has to go through in order to be eligible on all levels in order to get a quote-unquote athletic scholarship. It's even different from a quote-unquote regular college student. And she was informing the parents and the players about what they need to do. She passed out folders. Each one is a personal portfolio for each guy basically so she can take them through the whole process to make sure that by the end of their senior year that they will be ready to go to college, which is vitally important. And this is one of the main reasons why I coach football, is for that purpose. So it was a very constructive. So now what the scene I want you to envision in your head, this is a black female, and there was only one person that would not be racially classified as a non-white black person that's in there, that was in this meeting, is what I'm saying. So that is something that's very constructive in my mind as far as that concern. And this is what we do, other than just, you know, winning football games and a championship. You know, this is what we do. This is one of the reasons why the young people are attracted to us. You know, meaning the football staff, which is all non-white black males. And in turn, to the point to whereas what I suspect are racists are filtering around the county that where they're doing some cheating or whatever, that sort of thing like that, and blah, 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 you know, that sort of thing. And actually what really is the situation is, as I mentioned before, nowadays the players go where they think someone is going to be able to help them, assist them to get where they want to go to college, that sort of thing, as opposed to being loyal to the old high school, you know, that sort of thing like that. It's not that much loyalty in that. It's loyalty in who is going to be, and they basically see that we are going to help them in that way more so than a lot of other places. And also from that standpoint, there's a lot of guys that we have all coached together, all black males that have branched out of other high schools, where the young people are also going to those guys too, because we all exhibit the same formula, is what I'm saying. And that's just the way it is. As opposed to the high school that I attended when I was a student, they are like leaving out of there in droves and coming to this high school where I work at. And so these are just some of the things that I've witnessed and participate in and continue to be working towards, because I use football, quote unquote, a sport, as a platform in order to be able to do this. And now, mind you, now everybody's not good enough to get a scholarship, but at least by being in the atmosphere, there's some attributes that come from working with other people in a quote unquote team atmosphere where they can learn and be able to go to other things that they are qualified or want to do, even if they're not able to be a quote-unquote college football player, you know. And so just, you know, speaking about the atmosphere. And that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Context of white supremacy. Continuing to get in some of these emails. This is a black male. I wanted to share one of many instances I have with workplace racism. I work for a large grocery store company, one that is constantly winning all sorts of awards. They just recently received the award for being the second best company in America to work for, behind Google. I have been employed with this company for 5 years. I currently hold the position of receiver. Basically, I'm responsible for all the product that comes in the door and that all the bills get paid. Every day, all of the management hold a morning Huddle at 9 a.m. The Huddle is where they go over that day's goals, special promotions, etc. Part of my responsibility is to order and stock all the necessary packaging used by the departments. This can range from salad bowl containers to toilet tissue. Management, 7 white males, 4 white females, holds their huddles directly next to one of the main packing areas. Today, I was in the main packing area stocking the shelves at the same time as the morning huddle. I usually try to avoid being around these huddles. If I am, somehow my name or department is usually brought up, not in a complimentary way. As I am putting the packaging away, I hear their voices raise in excitement. I immediately walk in the opposite direction. I immediately walk in the opposite direction away from the noise. Before I get a chance to get away, an older white female yells out my name and says to do the woohoo yell. I ignore her for 2 reasons. 1, I have no idea what she is talking about. And lastly, I am not here to be their entertainment. She yells out louder the same thing. This time, everyone is quiet, eagerly awaiting for today's entertainment. I look her square in the eyes and firmly stated, no, loud enough for all of them to hear me, and continue to look her dead in the eyes. Then I turned away and continued to do my job. All I could hear for the rest of the huddle was whispers. Boy, you were about 8,000 different nigger this and nigger that and nigger this. That's my guess for what the whispers were, but I could be wrong. Speculating. The whole situation had a plantation feel to it. The masters sitting on the porch, and they called to a slave to entertain for them. Part of my code is to do my job the best I can, hold my head held high, and keep to myself. Right on. Great job not being entertained. I think Mr. Fuller has talked about that consistently as well, in terms of, you know, we're not on a job to be entertainment for whites. That's not what they hired us for. We're not into jokes. I think Thomas in New York and many others have said, just setting that tone. I'm serious. I'm serious. I'm here to do the job that I was paid for, that I was hired to carry out, and that's it. And get that reputation so that, you know, anything else that you all are doing, this extracurricular, that has nothing to do with me. Back on task. We have about 20 minutes left, and I still have more emails. About 20 minutes. Did any folks have more commentary they wanted to get in? Either suggestions based on what we've heard thus far. If you had your own situation you wanted to share, feel free.
Our greetings. Can I be heard?
Greetings, Roz. Good to hear from you, sir.
Hey, greetings to you guys and to to all the other callers and listeners. I just wanted to touch base with a final update from my most recent plantation. So today I got an email, and in the email was the signed forms, separation documents that I had to fill out before I left. And the final step was for the CEO to sign the form. So I finally got the forms completed by him. So the final update is actually official now. So shortly after my birthday, the 7th should arrive. And my birthday is July 7th. So I think it was the 12th, if I'm not mistaken, is when it should be there. Another good thing is with this particular plantation, they provide 3 months of reimbursed COBRA, so I could at least keep my coverage the way it is. And for up to 3 months, they'll reimburse me for the, you know, whatever amount I have to pay out of pocket, because you pay it in full yourself. So that's something I'll be taking advantage of as well. And then also, because of the laws between New York State and New Jersey, ultimately, even though I live in New Jersey now and I work in New York, I actually have to go through unemployment in New York State, or in New York State, but via New York City. And ultimately, with the severance pay, they can actually either shorten your benefits or not allow you to get them for a certain period of time, or not at all, depending on the severance and when you receive it. So from what I understand, there were previous groups that left the company in which they might have had issues getting their unemployment and their severance due to the timing of when the payments were issued. So they actually allowed people to make the decision whether or not they wanted to wait at least 40 days, which the limit for New York City is 30 days. If you get your severance after at least 30 days after your separation from the company, then it will not interfere with your unemployment at all. And I took the 40 days. So I'll be getting it just in time where I'll still be able to collect the unemployment and get the severance and everything. So it worked out really good. Lucked up with this particular plantation because I don't trust white people whatsoever. That's how this whole situation played out. They were lying for almost 2 years in the first place. So ultimately, I just wanted to touch base and just give that final update that they actually did what they were supposed to do. excuse me. So I always try to psychologically prepare for the worst with white people. And that's pretty much what I prepared myself for. But it worked out. So I just wanted to say thanks for taking my call. And I'll mute my line. And probably until I get something else, I'll be chiming in on other people's workplace racism incidents, or if I have incidences when I go out that can be applied to workplace racism, I'll be speaking on those as well. So thanks again, guys, and great program as well as always.
Congratulations. Fantastic. Fantastic. That might be good information to check out in advance, like what their severance package looks like and all of that. That's something that, you know, if things come to a conclusion, amicable or no, it might be better to know that information in advance. As opposed to things being stressful and chaotic at the end. And then you got to try and sit and think with a clear head. What is this policy? And, you know, what's, you know, do I need to wait this? I mean, yeah, you want to be able to kick your feet up. That's another one, just like the policy and procedure. That's part of the policy and procedure. In fact, that's why that right there is exactly why I say you should do that at your leisure. When you get the job, even if it's thick, the manual, you can take 2 weeks. Read a little bit each day, and then you can highlight, you'll know, you know, what you need to know, because that's real important information to know about your finances and what have you. You had more, Roz?
Yes, you just made me think of something. I just wanted to say to anyone that's in earshot that one industry that tends to have really great, they pay really great, and they also have really good severance are startup companies. And for anyone who might be looking for work, there's a website called AngelList. It's www.angel.co, and they deal strictly with startups all around the country and in some cases even internationally. So, and I have seen companies in London that also are on AngelList as well, because I know that Stacey's on the line. So I just wanted to throw that out there if there's any other London listeners on the line. But ultimately, the startups tend to pay really, really well. And they also have really great severance packages. So for people who might be interested in looking into the whole startup industry, that particular site only deals with startups. So all jobs you're finding is like tens of thousands of them on the website. And, you know, just something I wanted to toss out there, and hopefully that will be able to help some people that are in earshot. So thanks again, Gus. I appreciate it. I'll meet my line.
Appreciate that, Roz. Are there people that we've not heard from at all, people that have a hand up that we've not heard from at all?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Awesome. This is Ken Steele, and I am back in Chino Hills here in California. Earlier today and for the past couple of days, I was in Las Vegas. And the reason why I was in Las Vegas was I was booked to do some comedy. And, you know, I'm very familiar with, you know, kind of some of the stories that are associated with people going to different cities and doing comedy and basically doing any sort of live performance, especially when you're just starting out and you're still new. And even when you are, I guess, on, so to speak, and you're a regular seasoned performer, there's always difficulties in kind of getting paid and making sure that everybody is on the same page when it comes to compensation. And with this situation, I went to Las Vegas and I met the booker for the show. And it just seemed very suspicious to me that the booker was curious as to if the show was going to be going on at all. And, you know, there was just some frantic calling and, you know, at one point it was maybe within 2 hours of showtime. And me, I like to show up at the venue at least, at the very least, an hour beforehand. And we were at some sort of bar and he was trying to introduce me to some of his drinking buddies, or, you know, this is apparently another venue where he performs. And, you know, I kept on asking about when are we going to start heading over to perform. And finally, we started making our way to the venue and we get inside. And, you know, the venue, it looked like, you know, it was really busy. And I was, you know, pretty excited. And I was just, you know, I was thinking of, you know, like what my set list was going to be. And, you know, I was just getting ready to perform in my head. And I see that the guy who booked the show is talking with the owner of the bar, or what appears to be the owner of the bar. And it was made apparent to me that the person that the booker had booked the show with was fired, and that there was no performance that was going to be there that night at all. And, you know, I hear about these type of horror stories or whatever. And, you know, I was thinking about at that point was, am I even going to get paid for this? You know, I drove all the way from Las Vegas, or from LA to Las Vegas. You know, this is, you know, quite a trek. And, you know, the person that booked the show, you know, that, you know, brought me to Las Vegas, he started cussing out the owner and, you know, shouting all sorts of anti-Muslim and anti-Arabic expletives. And, oh, I have to mention that the person who booked the show was also a victim of racism. So the only thing I'm thinking of is, you know, I'm thinking, you know, am I going to get arrested at this juncture? I didn't know that, you know, this could go that far left. And he was just screaming and shouting. And finally, we got our things and we left. And, you know, I was just reminded of the fact that, you know, sobriety would be best. It became very apparent to me that the person who was, you know, who brought me out there, he was a, you know, an alcoholic, because he couldn't stop drinking. And we were trying to record a podcast and he, you know, just was so drunk and out of it that the podcast, it was just, it got very volatile, and he started, you know, yelling and shouting. And, you know, I just pretty much tapped out of the whole situation. But before I left, he honored his promise to me, to pay me. He paid me the full, you know, amount that I was promised for the show, you know, and, but, you know, and I thought that was really great, but, you know, it just was very apparent to me that this person was, an alcoholic. And, you know, it was made very apparent to me that, you know, I'm kind of in a business where, you know, a lot of things aren't guaranteed. A lot of things are not set in stone, and even contracts that are written out in paper and signed, you know, can easily be not honored by bookers and promoters and showrunners. So I'm kind of running into some of the pitfalls that performers run into, and that, you know, it was very apparent that this person, you know, did not respect, you know, his blackness. He just kept on using the N-word. And, you know, that to me was a red flag. And I don't know, just very, very confusing situation. I'm glad that I made it back to Los Angeles safely. Ugh. Thank you.
Sorry you had to endure that, Mr. Steele. Some idiot says sobriety would be in. Other people that we have not heard from at all. If you have a hand up, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, sorry. I work at night, so I'm sorry. I'm going to change my shift. Workplace racism. So, the last time I called in, there's this
guy that jumped over the counter and all that foolishness. So he wasn't going to come back, and he's on the do not rent list. So in the midst of that, I have a Caucasian task force lady. I think she's from Texas, and she's there. She may have had two strokes. We have task force because our site is so horrible, and we have so many complaints that someone has to come and oversee us and oversee our books. And we're getting a lot of audits since maybe November. And it's really been full force ever since January, particularly February, when our Caucasian general manager took a leave of went on maternity leave to have her baby. She just came back on Tuesday. So we had a slew of different task force and different people in and out of the hotel. And the hotel is still the same mess, just maybe 2% of a change, maybe. So in the midst of this, everything goes to me. Everything's my job. Now, mind you, I work at night, but everything's my job. Oh, it's her job. No, leave it. Don't do that. That's her job. She won't have anything to do. So mind you, I've been taking pictures since August when I start working there because that's how horrific this place is. And I don't understand how it's my job to bring it back to the normal by 7 in the morning, 7:30, whenever. But everything's my job, so I can't complete a lot of tasks because I have everything. Everything goes in the back. You're just checking in rooms and everything just goes in the back, and she'll get it. And I work 5 days a week on the 2 days that I'm off. No one washes dishes. No one does anything. Everything is for me for Sunday night when I get back. I just leave it for her. She'll be back Sunday. So it's a nightmare. So I just take pictures, though. So we got a new district manager because our old district manager left in the midst of whatever. So she went back where she was. We got a new district manager. And I just told him that I'm not going to be able to work under these conditions. Can I transfer? Or I'll, you know, figure something else. So in the midst of working on that, this task force Caucasian lady from Texas is micromanaging me. Now, I've only seen her once, and that's when I'm talking to whoever relieved me. I speak to a few coworkers, so she's one of them. I talk to her, listen to her, whatever, for however long I can endure it, and then I go home. And so we're talking, and so she comes up. Mind you, it's late. She should have been there. But she's, I'm going to go do this and this, and then I'll do that. So that's the first time I ever seen her in my life. I don't know this lady, but my name is ringing off to the hotel. She didn't do this. She didn't do this. Look, I put this there, telling my district manager, I planted this there, and she didn't even move it. So she's not doing her job. Everything is, I'm not doing my job. So Tuesday, she states, oh, I guess she's trying to do her job because her manager's coming back. And just little stuff like that. So maybe a week back, the Caucasian guy that jumped the desk came and he was checked in the hotel when I got there. So this guy, he was just like, yeah, I told that dude, why the hell did you jump over the counter, dude? And then he said, well, you said somebody was going to be here. I didn't say jump over the damn counter. So he's like, yeah, he's in room whatever. I said, he's here? Yeah. I said, I thought he was on a do not rent list. Well, they checked him in already. I said, so I called corporate. I called the corporate number and I reported them to corporate. I reported the whole incident with the guy. I reported the task force lady terrorizing me in her little. Now, mind you, this lady has been there for a month. She sleeps. She's on the first floor, right at the front desk. Everything's on the first floor. Everything should be spotless. No. She's doing nothing but taking smoke breaks with the Asian lead and keeping a confusion amongst us and making it complicated for us. And then making everybody not want to work to where I got to do all the doggone work. So it took like an hour to do the formal complaint. So I guess I'll see what happens after that. And then I also, in the loop, I reported my general manager because she's always been a problem. She's the reason for the problem. She just brought her Asian cousin-in-law by default in to stand in her place so they wouldn't bring anyone else in and put together that the place was a mess. But it turned out wrong anyway. But since she's white, she always gets that second chance. So she was allowed a second chance to redeem herself. So she's not on schedule with me until Tuesday. So I won't see her till Tuesday because she tries not to deal with me because I'm about my job. So we're not going, I'm going to talk about why this place is like this. That's what I, other than that, I don't want nothing to talk about with you. Good morning. All right, goodbye. What's going on with this? Y'all don't work in the daytime? Oh, this and this. So now with the dishes, because I usually have the dishes with the laundry, filth. I just took pictures last night with the dishes in the laundry. So I just have a collage of the pictures and stuff. But now, just yesterday, oh, put the dishes in the green bucket. Now you want the dishes in the green bucket. I've been requesting the dishes to go in the green bucket instead of with the linen and sheets and dog whatever, because we're pet friendly, for months. Mind you, she's been gone from January till just yesterday, Tuesday. So I've been asking for this for months, but you wait till Tuesday to decide you want to implement the rule. And they still don't follow it because,
hold
I'm
on
sorry.
One second.
Go
oh, it's no apology. It's just we're almost at the end of the program. I just wanted to just leave a few minutes because we had one other caller who hadn't been able to share at all. I did want to say, though, I thank you for calling in. This is our mom in the Bay Area. I did want to say this. You talked before, the guy jumping over the counter and everything. All of the rules in the system of racism, white supremacy, these are used as weapons against black people. They demonstrate hourly. Whites violate these rules all the time. You said this white guy was on the do not rent list and for being violent, hopping over the counter and all this. And then, oh, we already checked him in. Yeah, he's in his room now. that's what white power is. Imagine a black. Mr. Curtis, are you with us, sir? Did you have commentary that you wanted to share?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
All right. I wanted to call and share something. I'm on Bluetooth right now in my car. Is the audio good?
You are clear, sir.
Just an incident. Like you guys know, I work in the shoe department. So something happened this week. I was coming back from my lunch, and this white lady at the checkout counter, she saw me coming back. I had like a water bottle under my armpit, texting to my phone, still on my lunch break. She flipped the shoe open and said, "What size is this?" And I just immediately responded. I said, "I'm on my lunch break." So I guess she got pissed off by that. And she responded back to me, "Your eyes don't work on your lunch break?" And I told her no. And I just walked away. But I was kind of thinking a more like codified response would be asking her or saying like, "Are you asking me to work off the clock?" You know, just leaving it like that. I had something else I wanted to share with a friend of mine, but I don't know if I have time. Maybe I could share that next week, but I'll just leave it at that for right now.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I think we have enough time, unless it's a long story that we could get it in.
No, let's share this one too. I have a friend. She works at the Las Vegas Strip. She's a dealer. So she's an Ethiopian woman. And she was telling me that she had this white male from Canada, Montreal, at her table. So, you know, she's dealing to him. And she had to take a break. So she flags over her friend, her coworker, who is also Ethiopian, to cover her. So when the new girl comes over, this white Canadian male, he tells her, "So, where are you from?" And she says, "I'm from Ethiopia." And he says, "Oh, really?" And she's like, "What does that mean?" And he says, "Well, your family must feed you good." And that's when she's like, "What are you talking about?" And he's like insisting like she's fat, and implying that all Ethiopians are supposed to be skinny. So she kind of like shut down and, you know, gave him, you know, shady service or whatever. And the original person came back to relieve her. And as they crossed paths exchanging, she said, "Hey, those are bad people over there." So my friend who told me the story told the guy, "What did you tell my friend?" And the guy explained to her, you know, he said, "All Ethiopians are supposed to be skinny," or whatever. So you don't say that. And, you know, the guy felt very bad, and he apologized to her. So he found the girl that, you know, he was trying to insult on the casino floor, and he went up to apologize to her. And her response was, apology not accepted. Didn't say anything else. So that's all I had to share this week.
Black self-respect. That's outstanding. Outstanding. Not interested in your tacky apologies. If I can get on the record as well, Las Vegas sucks. Just since that has been mentioned a couple times now. Man, oh man. There's nothing in Vegas. Just if you're en route to the Grand Canyon, I guess. But, I mean, woof. You can totally skip Vegas. There are other places that you can gamble. With that, that will conclude this week's Workplace Racism. We still had other written commentary, but I'll get that out on the compensatory call-in. Was grand hearing from everyone. I hope it was a constructive exchange. Tomorrow, we'll be here same time. We're doing the memoir for Gil Scott Heron, The Last Holiday. And the reason we're doing this, number one, just because Gus, I love biographies. We've done a number of them on the program. Gil Scott Heron is one of my favorites. I think a lot of people are big fans of his work. The Revolution Will Not Be Televised and other pieces. But also, this is a really nice follow-up to Coretta Scott King. Her autobiography, she talked a lot about her efforts to get the Martin Luther King holiday, a federal holiday, Stevie Wonder's involvement. Gil Scott Heron was also involved, and he talks about Stevie. In fact, he begins the book with a poem to Dr. King and talking about Stevie Wonder's commitment, the racism he faced, and then his commitment to getting the federal holiday for Dr. King. And I remember some listeners said that they had heard the song Stevie Wonder's Happy Birthday, but they had no idea the context that that song was for Dr. King and to get a federal holiday. They had no idea, and I suspect other people are not well informed about that and or not informed about Gil Scott Heron's life. It's the book is, it like tells his story, right? Him growing up and what life was like for him growing up in Mississippi and moving north and all that. And it also tells the impact of Dr. King's assassination, his understanding of racism, and why he helped get this holiday established. But that is our book. I think it shouldn't be that difficult. It came out in 2012, so it shouldn't be that difficult to find hard copy or e-version. Someone sent me a link. I think it's available online, so you should have a lot of options if you want a hard copy to follow along. But I'm looking forward to it. Should be great. 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Compensatory call-in on Saturday. If you have questions, gripes, complaints, drop an email untiljustice@gmail.com, and we will follow up promptly. Thanks again to everyone who shared a bit of their Thursday evening. Hope it was constructive. We'll be back in about 24 hours. I will state again, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. July 4th is nearing for those in the United States. It's going to be lots of excuses. It's getting warm, summertime. Let's get a brew. Let's go out and drink. It's going to be lots of excuses. Just because the weather is nice and you get a little extra sunshine does not mean be lax in your codification. Racists, whites, they are dedicated to terrorizing black people. You do not want to be impaired on this planet and not being able to pay attention to what's happening around you and make great decisions. Your decisions might mean the difference between life, death, being placed in greater confinement, terrorized in any number of ways, just based on the decisions that we make day to day, minute to minute. Being intoxicated, period. You are going to make a lot of bad decisions, questionable decisions, if you are not sober under the system of racism, white supremacy. Lots of evidence to that. That's it, Creator. We ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
Problem. A victim.
Hey, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.